so am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man!
John Michaels and Triple H are our best of friends, are closer than a lot of brothers.
Triple H, my friend, is that a lie or is that the truth?
That is the ever-loving truth. But let me ask you a question. Who is the show stopper?
Me!
Triple H are our best of friends. That friendship is really what swayed Triple H. That's what brought him here to Raw.
Let's get ready to suck it!
Wait a minute. What the hell? No!
Shawn Michaels and I were never best friends. I used Shawn Michaels to get to the top. Just like Shawn Michaels used me to stay at the top.
I recognize that I'm not in the best of shape right now. The doctors have told me I'll make a full recovery. They say I'll be 100%. 100% by, say, SummerSlam.
Got nothing left to prove. Your threats I find absurd. I am your hell. Every time you think that I'm done, I've come back stronger. Every time you think that you've got me.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. John Pollock and straight out of SF, Wei Ting.
No, San Fran.
SF is what they don't like to call it.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah,
no,
see?
No, you're right, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
San Fran is what they don't want. Yeah, SF. Yeah.
San Fran, it sounds so, I don't know, I think of that restaurant, Franz, when I hear that. It doesn't sound hip or
San
cool.
Fran. Yeah.
Like SF.
SF doesn't sound cool either.
No. So. How are you?
Good. I'm still battling a bit of a cold, as you can tell from my deep, sexy voice.
Yeah, we heard you on Monday night. Your Skype cold, but in person, I can confirm. Yeah, you still sound like you got a bit of a kicker.
I feel great. I feel fine. It's just my voice, so I'm taking advantage.
Back to jiu-jitsu?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Even in the pouring rain last night?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just happened to rain. It made no difference. When are you coming back?
When are you going next?
Today.
Today's bad because tonight's a UFC fight night.
So what?
I gotta watch it.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
You can watch it after.
I really do. After?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna get out of here till late anyway.
These excuses, John. Come on.
Well, last night I went to your favorite restaurant, the Mandarin.
Oh, God.
And then I watched the new movie, You're Next.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with Bill Goldberg. But the villains in this movie wear these goat masks.
Oh.
Just like the Wyatt family.
The same mask?
Yeah, they're very similar. Little different.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're kind of
I wonder if they got the influence, because this movie played at Midnight Madness here at TIFF like 2 years ago.
I feel like I've seen these goat masks around various places. I don't know. They just kind of popped up.
I was going into this movie expecting, like, mind fuck horror movie.
Yeah.
And it like turns into like Evil Dead. Like it's just like, it's like the place is laughing at like these just ridiculous deaths. I mean, there's one guy who gets a blender put on him and they hit the blender and his head starts being chopped
up.
But it's just the most ridiculous shit. And it's just like played for comedy.
Yeah.
It was just the most bizarre movie to watch.
I imagine that's really part of the appeal of horror. Yeah. Is the campiness of a lot of
this one's pure camp. Like they do, like usually in some of these shitty movies, there's like just ridiculous like exposition. But this, it was like they were mocking themselves, where it was like the guy calls expecting to get his brother,
mm-hmm.
but it's the girl who's been the hero in this whole thing, and she's breathing. He assumes it's the brother and gives out the whole plan. I'm totally ruining this movie now. But anyway, don't go watch it. It's a rental.
Not a Conjuring?
No, it was not the Conjuring.
No.
And my buddy was he saw this at TIFF and was like, it's one of the best slasher films I've ever seen. And I was like, hey, it was fine. I wasn't bored during this movie, but I'm not going to recommend it.
Mm. What about this Brutus Clay movie? Are you going to watch that?
No One Lives.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've interviewed him twice now about the movie without seeing it. I feel the least they could do is send me a promo copy of it, and I'll watch it. Absolutely, I will. Getting inundated with stuff like people just like you and me have become the go-to now to, hey, can you review this? Like I'm getting people now who have their own projects are like, yeah. Can you review this?
Yeah.
So I got to pick and choose because I think part of our criteria, hey, I'd love to review obscure stuff, but at the same time, something that our listeners have a clue about.
Yeah,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Right.
Like
I mean,
if it's hey, can you review my my independent show here in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that really has mass appeal outside of you and some of your friends.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We're not sellouts.
No, we're not. Well, we're not making any money off this.
Although, if you would like to pay us, we might
consider it. Sure, absolutely. If you want to send us food, which has happened in the past. If you want to send tapes to us, such as Will, our good pal Will, and his last name, it'll come to me any second right now. Will McNutt.
Okay.
Sent
what?
Us.
Nut?
McNutt.
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 Whoa, what a name.
What's wrong with that?
Oh, nothing. It just sounds like,
as someone that's probably awesome. Been, many times made fun of with a name.
I mean, I'm not making fun of this guy's name. I just think it's a pretty cool name, McNutt.
This guy has sent
Suck
us.
Suck my McNutt.
Well, that's inappropriate. Look, this guy sent us VHS copies of Sold Out 1999 and 2000, Starrcade 98, bunch of WWF pay-per-views from the 90s. Some future review potential, I think.
Yeah, this guy was just happened to be cleaning out his...
And he also gave us a compilation of a very famous tournament.
Yes, the Brawl for All tournament.
Which is at the top of the list,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, actually, yeah, he contacted me about this, too, and this was the one I was most looking forward to, because it's hard to find all these Brawl for Alls together in one place, and this guy had just sent it to us, so that'll definitely be a review we'll be doing shortly.
Absolutely, that's going to be a big one. We've got some reviews planned. I think we've decided, I teased it last week, Wei, while you had just rudely left me right as I went into the feedback.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, with a nice door sound effect even added to it. Because Wei hasn't listened to it.
No, I haven't. No.
But we have picked our review for our anniversary show.
Coming up in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, yes. Do you think we should keep it a mystery? Or do you think we should mention it ahead of time?
I mean, we can mention it just to give people a heads up so that they can watch.
I don't think.
Why don't we mention it next week?
Okay. Well, we're not going to mention it now.
Yeah.
I think it's really good, but I don't think anyone's going to watch it.
You don't think so?
I think it's tough to watch.
Okay. All right. So it's more of a review that you'll just hear us talk about and hopefully be entertained.
We're going to find out.
I mean, I'm sure some people would like the chance to get caught up. I mean, what about feedback? You're not going to ask for feedback?
Well, I guess we'll see. We're going to have to discuss this. This is a better off-air discussion.
Oh, okay.
Next week, we'll give you some teases.
Yeah, okay.
If not outright saying it. But today, we are chatting about SummerSlam 2002, which is our biggest build-up, I think, to a pay-per-view. I mean, three-week build here.
It's like a month in the making.
This has been a big, big build.
Yeah.
SummerSlam 2002, I think one of the most requested events on our message board.
For sure.
So rather than just throw out the review, we built up to it. We watched the Raw and the SmackDown over the past 2 weeks leading into this show. And I've got to say, I think I really like to go back and watch, because pay-per-views I can recall pretty well. But the TV shows, you kind of watch them, and it's like you forget about them afterwards. And you kind of forget kind of the setup for this and get you pumped up for a pay-per-view.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the case of, this talent roster from both Raw and SmackDown being as tough or as strong and as different as they were, I thought it was especially important that we do it for this show.
Do you miss now watching this, moment of history? Do you miss this time back with the brand extension where it was much more separate? Do you prefer where it's just kind of mixed right now? Because obviously things are different. The talent pool isn't what it was like 11 years ago.
I mean, here's what I miss. I do kind of miss the fact that there's a distinct distinction between the two brands. However, what I truly miss is SmackDown. I don't miss that Raw at all. I don't miss that,
no.
that HLA era of Raw. But that era and that roster and the writing of that portion of the roster on SmackDown was tremendous. If you're telling me that one of these shows can be that great, the other can be shitty, whatever, I'll take that for sure. But if you're going to tell me that both shows are going to be shitty, then no.
Imagine 3 hours of that Raw in 2002.
That'd be terrible. I mean, all I really want is good wrestling. I don't really care, you know, what's divided, what's not. As long as the wrestling's good, as long as the TV's good, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think that SmackDown, I mean, it was, you know, Paul Heyman, David Lagana were kind of part of that SmackDown team at that point. And certainly, as we've mentioned many, many times, I think the height of SmackDown's history was that 2002 period. And this was kind of the kickoff to it, because it was really kind of the fall when Heyman got behind SmackDown and was writing it. And just a tremendous roster and really kind of built on trying to build new stars. And that's what this whole summer was about in 2002, was Brock Lesnar and getting him to this point at SummerSlam, because when he won the King of the Ring, that gave him the title match at SummerSlam, and it gave you a long-term kind of build here, that this whole summer is going to be built around this guy, who probably, you can make arguments, wasn't ready in June, but by August, it was like they put everything behind this guy, and yeah, he wasn't an A-level worker at the time, he wasn't a great promo, but that to me is kind of the positives of pro wrestling, is that you can hide these things, you can pair them with a Paul Heyman, and by the end of it, it felt like a brand new star had been created at the end of this show.
Yeah, he wasn't A-level, but I'd say even, you know, by the time of the King of the Ring, a solid, you know, B+. And he got good really fast, Brock. You know, just starting from the day after WrestleMania when he debuted to this match, I thought he progressed tremendously, really quickly.
So, SummerSlam this year, in 2002, August the 25th, took place from Long Island, New York, and I really wish that I hadn't skimmed through the feedback before this show, because it was pointed out, and I had no idea about this, that Zack Ryder was in the second row holding up that HBK Still Rules sign.
Oh, that was him?
Wearing a Shawn Michaels, like, zebra hat and those lame red heart glasses of Shawn Michaels.
Wow.
And I assume it was Zack Ryder, as one of our listeners pointed out. I can't remember who said it. But then I found myself, much like Impact last week with Nate Milton, is that I'm looking at this guy half the time and just trying to get a glimpse of the, because he was very hard to see, whereas Nate, it was just so amazing that it was just him front and center facing the hard camera. But here we had Zack Ryder from Long Island taking in SummerSlam, and got way more camera time on this show than he has probably in the past 3 years combined.
That's right, yes.
He was much more over, I think, back here in 2002.
Maybe he should adopt this gimmick.
He is just, man, like, where has Zack Ryder gone?
Well, he's gone to the place where you go when you try to get over and they don't want you to.
And then you do interviews talking about how you're trying to get over and they won't let you get over.
Didn't he go through some type of a gimmick change on his own?
He was, because he ended off the Z True Long Island story. They wanted to, like, I think, change his hair up a bit. And he had come on TV with a slightly different look and started cutting promos online, kind of a different character. But it never went anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Unfortunately, I kind of see him as another guy, kind of like Ted DiBiase Jr., where, you know, maybe started with a bit of potential, but in the end, just kind of, you know, depressingly walking away from the business without, you know, too much accomplished.
Do you think we'll see Ted DiBiase pop up in TNA or anywhere?
No, I don't.
I could very well see that guy just trying to get into acting or something and not doing...
Get out of wrestling.
There's not a whole lot of options when you leave. It's like, TNA's hiring no one right now.
Yeah.
And... I mean, Ring of Honor is like giant step down. It's like if you're voluntarily leaving WWE.
I don't even know if he could really cut it with that style.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, people know the name, but it's not like he's a standout.
Well, you know, you see so many of these guys when they start out, and they all have so much potential. Everybody has dreams, and then you hear about some of these guys getting released eventually, and it's just like such a, I don't know.
Unfulfilled dream.
Yeah, you just basically like publicly see these people whose dreams have kind of not come to fruition, which is kind of sad.
We're starting this one off on such a downer.
I'm sorry.
But I just remember this one interview John Cena did years ago, and he was asked a question about, you know, who do you foresee headlining WrestleMania with you in 5 years? And he said, Ted DiBiase was his pick, like 5 years ago.
Sure, no,
and it was like internally, people, much like Curtis Axel, internally, people were so high on those two. I always thought they would have been perfect as a tag team together in that neither guy was ready for a singles run, and you put them together, it's a cool little second generation deal, but or third generation for Axel. But a tag team, to me, it's always perfect for guys that are missing something for a singles run, and they can complement each other, and they help each other get over when they're in similar spots.
Yeah.
And I thought they would have been great as just a team together and let them go.
Sure.
And instead, we're seeing, you know, the singles run really didn't click with Ted DiBiase at all. He had that terrible pairing with Maurice.
Right, yeah.
The auto-tune Ted DiBiase theme,
oh,
remember
God.
That?
Yeah. I mean, who knows what might have gone on backstage to, you know, have them basically give up on the guy. But absolutely, I mean, you see the raw talent there, and you think about how much could have been done, but wasn't. But, you know, what could have been, you never say never. Maybe he will show up in TNA.
Well, let's go back to 2002, where there was lots of talent that were both being positioned highly and also being given up on. And it was so funny to watch SmackDown leading into this, where we saw a young John Cena and a young Batista who had no plans for the SummerSlam at all. They were just, especially John Cena, was just completely forgettable.
Oh, man, Cena, I feel like, was probably totally in danger of being
Batista was, like, getting, you know, he was getting separated from D-Von. They were high on this guy.
They would have given him any chance in the world simply based on his look. But John Cena was about as vanilla of a wrestler as you could get. As far as, you know, the roster on this show, though, I thought the depth of the roster at this time was at an all-time high, even more so than last year, because unlike last year, you had dropped all the baggage of this WCW, ECW invasion. You're basically now, at this point, a year in, taking all these great talents from the entire wrestling industry in North America and giving them completely clean slates. You got Eddie Guerrero, you got Benoit Chavo, you got Booker T, not as WCW wrestlers, but just as pro wrestlers being brought into the WWE, putting them into, you know, feuds that actually make sense. Stalker, shit.
DDP is the stalker.
Yeah,
DDP unfortunately didn't make it to this point onto the SummerSlam after that classic at last year's SummerSlam with the Undertaker and Kane. Great cage match. It opened up with Michael Cole and Taz and shots of the World Restaurant. Crowd is very loud here. I could barely hear these two. Now, I should explain. I watched this on a DVD because years ago the WWE sent us this box set of SummerSlam, so that's how I watched this. You watched this?
I watched the copy online that was from a DVD.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. So we started things off with Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio. And Kurt Angle wearing his, like, what I like to call his candy cane outfit.
Oh, okay.
He was wearing, like, a singlet. And it was, like, vertical red stripes with white.
The candy cane.
Is just about the only person, I think, that could pull off this... the peppermint Kurt Angle.
Peppermint.
So Mysterio shows up from behind Kurt to start the match.
This was Rey Mysterio's first pay-per-view.
Yeah, we should mention that, you know, Rey Mysterio was one person that when WCW did go out of business, I mean, he did have a contract at the time, but they weren't interested in Rey Mysterio at that time. And he came back, he had some injuries at the time, but was pretty much just told to wait, be patient. They just weren't convinced of him based on his size. It took a lot of people within the company that had worked with him to really push the company, hey, you really want to grab this guy. And it's amazing when you look at all the merchandise this guy has sold, one of the most popular babyfaces they've ever had, and he wasn't someone that was really being considered for a job after WCW went out of business.
And I think they did a great job of marketing him. First of all, bringing the mask back, great. I mean, honestly, like, could you imagine Rey Mysterio coming back without the mask? Well, it would be terrible.
Yeah, that was very smart on their part to just ignore WCW's big mistakes of just, you know, doing stuff for the sake of doing them.
I thought the pants, you know, adopting the pants instead of the tights,
right,
gave him a cool kind of, you know, more like a hip-hop type of look.
Also cover those knee braces.
That too, that's yes.
Helpful.
But, you know, debuting with those, you know, cool little videos, just showing him doing all these high spots and just booking him really well. Like, up until this point, actually, his entire first year I thought was really
his
good.
His debut, if you remember that night on SmackDown, it was
Chavo.
Like he got into... I remember him doing that leap off the top of the cage, like across right. body into the ring, and positioned with like the top baby faces on that brand, like yeah. Edge and whoever else was in the ring with him. Like they, from night one, it was like, this guy's someone to be taken serious with. And I was stunned at the time.
And I imagine if he did debut during the invasion, I don't think
he would have been so lost.
There.
A lot of these guys who they were smart to just, hey, I am not taking a buyout on my contract. I'm going to wait. And who are smart enough to realize, hey, I'm going to be needed at some point. And that worked for Hogan, for Hall, for Nash, for Goldberg, for Rey Mysterio, yeah. Scott Steiner, all these guys. It was like, hey, they were eventually going to come calling. Mm-hmm. And they did here in this case. It was just, if you had a name, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
So the match began with Rey showing up from behind and hitting Kurt from behind with a head scissors. And Angle goes for the ankle lock really early up, gets set up, though, for a 619, but ducks out of the way, and then pulls Mysterio to the floor. These two, it just like right from the first lockup and exchange, it was just like such fluid chemistry between two. Like sometimes you could just watch and see two guys that just completely complement each other, and that was the case here. And one of the things that with Kurt, it was just, this guy had no problem selling for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was like, even at one point, Kurt was like viewed in the company as someone like, is he big enough to put the title on? And I think
that's ridiculous.
I know, that sounds crazy. But here he is in this role where he's in with an even smaller guy, and I think he's like, I'm going to sell my ass off for this guy.
Yeah.
And it made both of them look great.
At the same time, like, his style was such a good technical grounded power style that he could play that giant in this David versus Goliath type of matchup. And I thought a great first feud to put Rey Mysterio in. First of all, as a SummerSlam match, this is very much a dream match for a lot of people
sure.
that are fans of both these guys. Rey Mysterio versus Kurt Angle. And here you have Kurt Angle, a guy who can go with Rey Mysterio's speed, a guy whose moveset contrasts very well with Rey Mysterio's high flying. So I think a really good first feud.
Mysterio hit him with a jawbreaker, then ran into a belly-to-belly suplex as Angle pulled the straps down. He went for an angle slam, which was countered by an arm drag, then pulled the ropes down, Rey did, as Angle ran at him and went to the floor. And then in the spot that became a trademark for Rey, he went for this dive to the floor, but referee Jimmy Cordero steps in front and says, "No, Rey, you cannot do this dive." And then he just unbelievable heat that this spot always got. And then Jimmy turns around, and then Rey dives over top of Jimmy, like using his head basically as a launching pad, and then hits Angle on the floor. And this was just, I'm curious who came up with this spot.
Yeah.
But it was like a trademark for most of Rey's big matches and stuff to do the ref would step in and the crowd would be so upset, and then they'd get the spot a few minutes later.
Yeah.
So there you go. Springboard leg drop to the back of Angle's head, got an awesome near fall. Then Mysterio came off the top, left onto the shoulders of Angle, but then got dropped into an ankle lock. It's countered. Rey hits the 619 and the West Coast pop for a massive reaction as Angle kicked out of that. And then Angle blocks a Hurricane Rana off the top and then goes to grab the ankle in midair, does get the hold, and Rey taps out at 9 minutes and 21 seconds. Just a super hot opener.
Oh, man. This is just a great, great match. Just very flawless execution of everything that they did. A great pace right off the start. A really good showcase match for Mysterio. And, you know, I'm a little surprised by the outcome. Not having Rey go over in his first WWE match, pay-per-view match. But at the end, there really are no losers in this match.
Yeah, I didn't think it hurt him at all.
Both guys came across so well.
Yeah, really, really great opener. Stephanie McMahon, at the time the general manager of SmackDown, is with a PA telling him how superior SmackDown is and tells him to go find Eric Bischoff and tell him to top that last match. And then she walks into her office and there is Eric Bischoff because tonight they have to share an office and they're going to watch SummerSlam together.
Oh.
Tension will be mounting here.
Oh, yeah.
Then they go over to the Raw announced team of Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and Lawler says, we now welcome you to the Raw portion of SmackDown. And then has to correct himself. The Raw portion of SmackDown. Mm. And they were going to try and top Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle with Chris Jericho and Ric Flair. And they recapped the angle from Monday with Flair destroying the band equipment. And at least on my version here, Ric Flair came out to, like, the theme music that he used for his 1992 run in the WWE that they never did use. So this looked to be dubbed over on the DVD.
Yeah, I imagine they don't have the rights to, what is it, the Space Odyssey?
I guess not, yeah, but they always used that for all the pay-per-views and TVs
only
for him.
Only live, yeah.
So, there was a sign in the crowd, Flair is old, in 2002. Jericho gets the early advantage here, misses an elbow drop, takes just a ton of chops.
He actually looks incredibly young here.
I know. This is the comparison point to 2013. Mm. Jericho skins the cat, then takes a bump off a chop. Just tons of chops in this match. It was like a Kobashi match. Flair gets tossed into the corner but cannot get up and over. That was a spot I think he needed to retire at that point.
Yeah.
I remember he missed it at WrestleMania that year with The Undertaker, and then here missed it with Jericho. Just... time to move that one on. Don't need it. He gets clotheslined to the floor. They get back into the ring. Jericho hits a drop kick off the second turnbuckle for a two count. Then Jericho is choking him with wrist tape, but Flair fights back with more chops. Jericho counters a vertical suplex, goes for the walls, and Flair counters that with an inside cradle. And then Flair goes for the walls of Jericho, but ends up not getting it, but gets a half crab. Jericho gets out, gives Flair's finish, the figure four, to him. And this was the least dramatic grabbing of the ropes. Like, Rick was, like, under the rope, and he still had to pretend that it was a big struggle to reach his rope. The crowd was not into that at all. And it gets broken up. Jericho gets upset at Charles Robinson, then takes a chop, and Charles Robinson barely gets nudged by Jericho, but has to sell that he is dazed as a result of this. And Flair hits a low blow, applies the figure four, and Chris Jericho taps out to Ric Flair at 10 minutes and 21 seconds.
Well, considering, Flair's limited mobility even at this time, actually, compared to today, he's like very mobile. He actually was in great shape. This match was quite good, but they definitely lost that crowd for the finish, starting from that awkward rope grab, like you mentioned. It was strange in that they're trying to set up something where Flair was grabbing the rope and then he tapped. So he grabs the rope and then taps to the finisher, and then this was supposed to create some type of controversy. And I thought it just kind of deflated the crowd because I know what they're going for, but it just seemed like they screwed up somewhere. At least that's what it came across like. And it just seemed to confuse the crowd and seemed to really take the wind out of the energy that they had. So I feel like they kind of lost them, but overall the match was quite good.
Yeah, it was fine. I was surprised at the time that, you put Ric Flair over Chris Jericho. And this was such a weird year for Chris Jericho. I thought it was one of his best in-ring years. Mm-hmm. But after he lost that title, it was such a terrible build-up for WrestleMania that he just became this kind of utility player that they put in with, if they want to get a good match out of someone.
Kind of like what he is now.
Yeah, but and they also went so heavy on the comedy with him at this point. Like, I always remember, like, him with Christian, and they did that ass cream segment. Yep. I always remember that. And it was just like, I don't know, it was just too much comedy. And not good comedy either at the time. So Ric Flair gets that win. And then Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, they're in the locker room, and apparently they're coming off an ad for Hulk Hogan's DVD, and Heyman says they're putting together a best of DVD because much like when a musician dies, they put out a best of album. Not true for Hulk Hogan. He had many, many more years left in the tank after this. Mm-hmm. And says that Lesnar has to take out The Rock. He's already inside of his head, and Rock already feels like the challenger tonight, and that tonight the next big thing is going to arrive. This was all Paul Heyman, as Lesnar just grinned and said,
But for Lesnar's part, he did great too. What made these guys such a great team and to this day is a great talker in Paul Heyman, of course, but Brock has just tremendous physical charisma.
Tremendous.
All he has to do is just flex a bit, do his wall push-ups and show off that tattoo on his back, and that's all you need.
We go to our next match. It's Eddie Guerrero against Edge. Another theme that not DVD usable was his Rob Zombie theme.
Right, okay.
So it came out to his old theme here. The story here that they were playing up on the announce team was that Guerrero has never been hit with the spear. Can Edge hit Eddie with that elusive spear?
I didn't feel like that point was driven across at all in that go-home show. They didn't.
No. I just picked it up here when they mentioned
it. They barely even like focused on these two as a match on that show.
Guerrero was looking to be expecting a back body drop in one of the opening sequences, but instead Edge hit him with a flapjack, so it looked very awkward as he went to... He was expecting to take one thing and then took something very different. Guerrero got tied up in the ropes, and as he's tied up in the ropes, Edge spears him.
Oh, right.
As he's tied up, I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? Just gets hit with it. And the announcers don't really bring up this fact.
Yeah.
I was like, well, there goes like the story of the match to me. He tries for another, but this time Eddie gets out of the way and Edge flies to the floor. So I don't know if this was just... I don't know what it was.
I imagine that Edge and Eddie and whoever the agent was probably didn't even think that that was part of the storyline.
Maybe the full effect of the spear is when you are not tied up and you take the impact onto your back.
I guess.
From the whiplash.
I suppose.
And being tied up in the ropes, it wasn't really a spear.
Oh, okay. I would think that'd be... It looks worse.
Well, but. Yeah, you can't move, and it's like you can't even shield like your ribs or anything.
Yeah.
So... From there, Edge is selling his left arm.
Upon falling to the floor, he lands on his shoulder and starts selling the shoulder.
And would sell it pretty much for the rest of the match. Guerrero's just attacking it, sent him into the steps.
They also call back to the cage match that he had with Kurt Angle recently on SmackDown, where he also tore or injured the shoulder.
Yeah, and missed some time from that spot. Guerrero comes off the top into an arm breaker, is constantly working over the arm, goes for a Kimura at the time, which I'm pretty sure neither guy knew what the significance was, but it was just like, he was like setting it up with like Edge kind of like on his stomach and he's like turning it, but it was like, this was still the time when, I don't think people really reacted to submission maneuvers.
No, but I mean, you still saw it in pro wrestling occasionally.
Goes for a hammerlock, a crossface. Edge then comes back, clotheslining him with his right arm, not the injured arm, uses a vertical suplex to send Guerrero to the floor, and Taz thinks he should be disqualified for that, for vertical suplexing him over the top rope to the floor.
Should be illegal.
It's like Bill Watts here on commentary. Yeah. And then he hits a cross body off the top to the floor. They get back into the ring. Guerrero once again has the advantage. Edge gets his knees up for the frog splash and hits the Edgecution, which was an implant DDT for a two count. Guerrero comes back with a Northern Light suplex for a two count. Then Edge gets knocked off the turnbuckle. Guerrero goes for a frog splash, but hits it onto the shoulder for a two count. And Cole says he doesn't want to injure the shoulder. He wants to amputate it.
Ooh.
This menacing heel.
That, I thought that was awesome when he frog splashes the shoulder specifically. I'm sure, though, it didn't seem to get a huge reaction from the crowd, I think, because maybe they thought it just looked like a screwed-up frog splash.
Yeah, they probably could have taken it like that.
But I thought it was brilliant, and I'm glad, you know, the announcers obviously pointed it out.
That's where announcers are key. Yeah. Like, the crowd very much could have been confused because they don't hear the announcers describing the shoulder and everything.
But I love the logic and just the detail of him doing his finisher to that specific body part.
And then the finish just kind of comes out of nowhere with Guerrero Irish whipping Edge off the ropes, and he comes off with a spear and pins him at 11 minutes and 48 seconds. And Cole says that Edge's shoulder is literally hanging by a thread.
Mm.
Okay. Literally.
Literally.
CM Punk just shaking his head at that one. So I thought a pretty good match. Built around the shoulder.
I did too. I thought, you know, yeah, I thought the telling the story of, you know, attacking the shoulder was done tremendously. I thought, you know, just seeing Eddie Guerrero do something as simple as working over a guy's shoulder is a real pleasure to watch. However, I thought it should have played a bigger role in the finish. I mean, in the end here, Edge is selling the shoulder the entire match. Then he just gets attacked. And then he goes for his spear with that injured shoulder. Doesn't really sell it afterwards. So I didn't think Edge sold it enough following the win. I was a little disappointed by all that, but aside from that, you know, good match still.
There's a promo about how WWE never goes on strike. Their confrontations take place in the ring, and pushing that our season never ends because this was when Major League Baseball was going through a labor dispute at the time. So the WWE pointing out that we don't have an off season, and it was just weird to see the men that they focused on in this, Edge, Lesnar, Benoit, and Guerrero, who either died or left because of premature injuries or just got so sick and fed up of the road schedule that they decided to pursue NFL football and later mixed martial arts. So, I don't know. Yeah. Hindsight is always my favorite part of these reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Coachman is in the back with the Un-Americans, and they cut a promo. This was awesome. They cut a promo on how Long Island is lazy, unappreciative, and unresponsive, as Christian says that they expect the crowd to be sitting on their hands as they perform at a world-class level because these fans always want more, which was great because Long Island has always had the rep of being one of the worst cities to perform in front of. I mean, right up there with, like, Corpus Christi and just Pittsburgh. Long Island is always one. And what was funny was, like, this crowd was pretty much into most on this show.
I thought this crowd was great.
But it was like, this is, like, legit, I'm sure, how many of the performers feel about Long Island.
Could that be because, you know, a lot of people from the surrounding areas would have traveled to this show?
I don't know. Certainly it was a huge show and, you know, might have gotten more people from outside of the city traveling and stuff like that. But, yeah, this was actually a night where I don't think you can criticize the crowd at all. They were great. So we go to our tag title match. Only one set of tag titles at this point in the WWE, with Lance Storm and Christian defending the titles against Booker T and Goldust, a match I completely forgot was on this card until we started reviewing these shows leading into it.
I find it so amusing that, you know, by default, Goldust here is a defender of America.
Yes.
Like this, not exactly your typical G.I. Joe, all-American stereotype in Goldust, but I guess Hollywood is in America.
Yeah, to really emphasize where things have gone, I mean, the Goldust character, I mean, his babyface turn was letting everyone know, no, I am not homosexual. That was his babyface turn,
really?
Essentially.
Well, what exactly happened?
Well, For when Goldust was introduced, I mean, that was always how the character was pushed, like very much, you know, hitting on Razor Ramon and pushing that. And then it all led up to Jerry Lawler and Goldust in the ring for a segment. And it was Jerry Lawler saying, "We all know you're, you know, queer." And Goldust attacks him and reveals, "No, stupid. I'm straight. Who do you think Marlene is? I'm married to her." And then the crowd was like, "Yay. Goldust is straight." This happened in our lifetime. This happened in the WWF in, like, 1996.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It happened in our lifetime. But
and then there was a sign here in the crowd that read, "Un-Americans equal Canadians in the closet."
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, he got us.
2002, way. Very intolerant wrestling fans.
Yeah. Well, maybe Darren Young will have a similar turn.
Yeah, I don't know. Jerry Lawler just heels on Canada at the beginning here, saying that, you know, what do you expect from a country who's have a national holiday when moose hunting season begins?
When is moose hunting season?
Duh, it's October the 3rd.
Oh, okay.
Every year. What are you going to do this year for moose hunting?
Got to get my camo vest ready.
Yeah, I got a 12 gauge this year.
Nice.
Yeah, we'll go kill some moose.
I got my binoculars.
Yeah. I got this 12 gauge. It's in the shape of a hockey stick.
Nice.
Yeah, and you can also, the back end, it drips out syrup.
Syrup.
So for pancakes.
Could, yeah.
Or you could drink it straight, which is always, that's my favorite shot at a bar, is straight syrup.
Wow.
That we have up here in Canada.
Do you have your boots?
I've got both a boots.
You got one boot. Yeah.
All right. If we said Keanu Reeves, I think we'd get all the check marks in our Canadian immigration survey. Storm tosses Goldust over the top turnbuckle to the floor, and they got the heat on him in their corner and just double-teamed him. And it was just constantly beating down Goldust until he finally made the hot tag to Booker. But the referee doesn't see the tag, so they continue here, just beating down on Goldust. Goldust eventually catapults Christian into Lance Storm, and Storm then goes to the floor, takes Booker off the apron so Goldust cannot tag him. It was just this constant build to the hot tag. The heels end up getting two chairs behind the referee's back. They go for a concerto, but miss and hit each other with the chairs. Goldust hits him with a double clothesline and then finally tags in Booker. who comes in. He hits Christian with chops, a missile drop kick off the top rope for a two count, misses an axe kick, hits a flapjack. Storm comes in and ends up hitting the referee with a drop kick. Then there's a double axe kick to Christian and Storm with the referee out, hits the spinaroonie to a big pop, sidekick to Christian. The crowd is just roaring here for the count as he's on top of Christian, but the referee is still out. Storm misses with a belt shot, and then Test runs in, hits a big boot to Booker, placing Christian on top, and the referee comes to, sees Christian, and covers Booker T for the win. 9 minutes and 38 seconds, and this to me is the forgotten match on SummerSlam that I thought was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I really wasn't looking forward to this match at all. I mean, you know, the feud itself didn't really intrigue me, but a really good match inside the ring. And, you know,
Goldust, I think, is really underappreciated when it comes to just a really quality worker.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you look at some of his earlier stuff before he was Goldust, and very, very good technique.
Yeah, and even
well.
Like later during that relaunch of ECW when he was put there to work with a lot of young guys. I mean, he had some of his outside of that TNA period when he was Black Reign. That was definitely the low point for him. But
or Seven.
Oh yeah, Seven.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, as a tag team, Booker T and Goldust were incredibly over. I thought one of the such an unlikely pairing that just clicked so well. Those skits, like at the movies, you remember?
Oh,
those?
They were great.
Those were
the Star Wars like one I remember.
Like, I mean, you know, talk about like, you know, buddy cop duo movie. Like, these two were, I thought, one of the best.
Do you remember the one when Booker T was a lumberjack?
They
did a sketch in the back where it was
that.
Like, I think it was for a lumberjack match. So Booker T's dressed up with like a beard and a hat and an axe.
All
and
that
a lumberjack.
Stuff, like for the most part, was like really, really good comedy and
very
that's
good.
Kind of rare in pro wrestling. So they were incredibly over as a tag team. Great job delaying Booker's hot tag until the end. And, you know, four very good workers. So a lot of drama at the end, even with that referee stuff.
I was fine with it. It worked out fine, and crowd was just really into the big hot tag spot that they built the whole match around. Then we went for a segment at the World Nightclub, and Nydia is with her boyfriend Jamie Noble, and they're doing a makeout contest with two guys where Nydia, not the two guys making out, but Nydia would pick one of the guys and then jumped on him, mounted him, and then stuck her tongue down his throat for an uncomfortable amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, she wasn't tough enough, and then this was what she, the prize.
This is her gimmick at the time, pretty much
trailer trash.
Yeah, trailer trash skank.
Yep.
I guess. She wanted to have a match on SmackDown to show off her tits, and then this.
She played it real well.
Doing like a Miley Cyrus gimmick.
Yeah, you know, like, they both played it well. Like, I thought Noble was good. She was good. I don't know. To me, though, like, she was a babyface.
Yeah.
She was a total babyface. But Jamie Noble was a heel.
Yeah, it was very confusing.
And then, I don't know.
But he liked to offer his girl to all comers.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean that to sound the way it did.
But, I mean, what was, like, the punchline here? Like, she made out? Like,
yeah. Look at this.
And this guy, like,
go to the World. This might happen to you.
Yeah. So I always...
be a star.
I mean, I always thought, you know, if these two were heels or supposed to be heels, like, she should have done something or he should have done something afterwards to kind of, you know, attack this dude or something. But no, nothing.
Nope. It was just... that was it. That was a whole set. They flew them there to the World. They had a crew there to film this. And this was a whole night's work
for
this team, for this two-minute vignette. So, how do you follow a makeout contest? Chris Benoit and Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental title with Raw. This was the only interpromotional match on the show where the winning brand would get possession of the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could kind of consider the... Brock was a Raw guy, wasn't he?
Brock was a Raw guy at that time.
Right.
So, I guess, you could have tried to figure it out and be like, well, if... you would assume if Brock, I think most assumed Brock was winning the title that night.
Yep.
I don't think that was a surprise, but I don't think anyone felt he was going to be going on over to SmackDown. So you could have figured out, well, if they're going to get that title, it makes sense SmackDown should get the Intercontinental title, and you would assume Benoit was winning this match. They were just completely fucking with everybody.
Yeah.
So what was weird here, did you notice this? Benoit's belt was blurred out. when he came down to the ring.
Oh, probably a WWF logo, the old logo.
But this was while they were WWE.
Yeah, but I imagine...
I guess they didn't change the belt?
No, this was like right when, or not far from when they did do it, because the ads even aired on here. The Get the F Out ads aired on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'd been a few months. It was like...
It takes a long time to print a new belt.
Get a new belt?
Yeah.
And all you need is a plate.
Cast. You gotta...
I love how worried they are that, you know, if someone saw this belt on the SummerSlam pay-per-view, that could be it for us. We could get sued.
I mean, you kid, but, like, that's what the lawyers are...
I guess
you
know, so.
...are there for. Imagine, like, if you're, like, part of the World Wildlife Fund and your job is to watch WWF tapes all day.
That would be
to
awesome.
To see if a logo pops up.
I got it!
I found
Imagine how excited they are after, yeah. like, 8,000 hours of viewing all this shit. One sneaks in there.
Yeah.
And then they're told, no. They can use the old WWF logo. It's just a scratch logo. I never understood that, how the old WWF logo was fine. It was just the scratch logo that they blurred.
I don't exactly understand it either, but I imagine it has something to do with the time frame.
Yeah.
That all that happens.
And now with the network, it's like they've spent all this money to get it unblurred.
Yeah.
It's like you spent all this, like, that's, if nothing else, just the man hours to go back and blur all this shit, and now go back and unblur all this shit.
Yeah.
I think
I mean, unblurring, I don't think it would take as much time. It's just like...
I hope it's just like you open up your project file and you just erase like a level and all the blur effects are off. But
it does give them an excuse to resell a lot of these old things. You know what I mean?
I hate watching these old shows where the turnbuckles are blurred, the fucking the entranceway is
like,
blurred.
It's like you have a smudge on your screen.
Oh, it's like, I don't know. It feels like, you know, there's like... porn happening somewhere, you know, like that's the only time you see these blurred out images. And then wrestling, it's like, oh no, turnbuckles.
Yeah, it's weird.
Anyway, Chris Benoit,
there's also a segment with Stefan Bischoff in the back.
Oh, you're right here, because Bischoff comments about Nydia knowing her place in the business, and Stephanie says women's places in the business are on top, just like her. And Bischoff says, we'll see who's on top in the IC title match.
Oh,
this had more sexual tension than was necessary,
dude,
I thought.
Like, so much sexual tension between these two in these skits. And, you know, it'd be really weird for Vince, I imagine. Like, imagine, like, Stephanie hooking up with Bischoff.
Well, they did that angle. The infamous Halloween SmackDown, where it's remembered as the night John Cena, like, established that character for himself. But that same SmackDown... they did this reveal of Eric Bischoff wearing an outfit and then made out with Stephanie, and it was never referenced ever again. It went nowhere.
Right, right.
So strange, but you're completely right. Like, Vince has put together segments with, like, Bischoff here, this guy who tried to put you out of business, making out with your daughter.
Like, how
like
old?
Like, almost raping your wife. Like, essentially, that's what happened.
Let's
he broke into her house.
I mean, let's think about how old Stephanie would have been at the time that Bischoff was, you know, in WCW.
Yeah, oh, well, that's more creepy. I mean, this at least, like, Stephanie would have been, like, 27 around here at this time, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought, kind of weird. You felt like these two were totally going to just hook up at the end of all this. And
that's where I always thought that was going, was that these two were going to come together and take over the WWE from Vince or something.
Wow, that would have been crazy. And which
didn't go that
possibly way. Done. But I thought, you know, I thought they were playing up the rivalry between Raw and SmackDown a little too much, because it, at times it seemed quite forced, you know, when we all know that they're essentially working together in the same company.
Yeah. It's like, get a separate office.
Yeah.
Why would you want to spend the whole night here with this person you're trying to put out of business?
It just got a little too playful, like, oh.
Well, Eric, let's see who's going to win the next match. All right, Stephanie. Chris Benoit and Rob Van Dam. Chris Benoit was not blurred out in this match. Started off with Van Dam.
Did you hear, like, some of these... have you ever seen, like, a Rey Mysterio match, like, that the WWE would air on, like, Vintage Collection or something, where they would have to blur out Rey Mysterio's face?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. WCW matches.
Oh, like a WCW match.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing they go to that level, considering how... Well... I mean, good on them to do that. But, I mean, it's so easy to just Google what he looks like. Yeah. I mean, it was on WWE television for years, and I mean, he's posed for pictures without his mask on.
Oh, wasn't that supposed to be a Christian's gimmick?
The blue dot. That's what Alex Greenfield told me. Was that, yeah, Vince had this idea. He's like, yeah, let's put a blue dot on his face.
He's not very good looking.
He just looks weird. By the way, you know, part of this was great to get this feedback, but, you know, we assume that most of our listeners are of one gender. And that of the male variety.
Of course.
I got some feedback from some female listeners who very much took me to task over my assessment of one Dean Ambrose.
Oh, what do
you
think?
Yeah, he apparently very popular in the female community. And how dare I?
How dare I rank him third? How many pieces of feedback did you get?
A handful. Wow. A handful, meaning more than two.
That's incredible. And how would they... Yeah, I'm curious. How would they rate?
Well, let me see.
The attractiveness of the members.
Because I received one just this morning. Let me see if I can just pull it up here, and I will read for verbatim here.
This is amazing.
You know what's really... Do you ever have a deal with your iPhone where you'll take a picture and it just... Your phone, like, crashes almost? Does it mean I have too much shit on my phone?
Like, yeah, you probably have too many...
Like, it says I have so much free gigabytes, but lately, when I go to take a picture, it just crashes.
It's probably the RAM on your phone.
Piece of shit. Okay, let's find this. From Ashley Taylor. Are you serious that Dean Ambrose isn't attractive? He is by far the sexiest of the three Shield guys.
Oh, man.
By far.
By far, okay.
You had the same ranking as me, though.
Yeah.
Reigns, Rollins, Ambrose.
I mean, as a heterosexual man, my rankings were...
I mean, like, let's face facts here. Like, Ambrose kind of has, like, the receding hair.
Yeah.
Great facials. I mean, tremendous, but I don't know if that's what necessarily...
But you know what it is? He's probably got the best confidence of all three.
That he has incredible presence.
Confidence is king.
Absolutely. That is definitely a great point to make.
Yeah.
So, that's, the, you know, women...
Well, good research.
Maybe,
I'd like to hear more about...
Your feedback on the ranking of the Shield?
Yes.
Give us your ranking of...
Tell us the pro wrestling in general. Tell us your PWI 100.
That would be an awesome contest.
Most attractive.
Who are the prettiest people in wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
That would be great. Give us a top 10 list. I'm serious on the feedback today.
Yeah.
Top 10.
That's what we're here for.
Let's do that. Let's you and I come up with a top 10 list for next week.
I'm not doing that.
Why not?
This is too weird. I got to assess the attractiveness of every guy on the roster?
Just the WWE roster.
No, thanks. No interest in that.
Oh, well, that's... How about 10 ugliest?
10 ugliest. Maybe.
Okay, well, give us some of your...
No, that's mean. Come on.
Well, I mean, this is a cosmetic industry, way.
That's
this
true.
Is what these people are being judged upon.
Well, Christian, number one, of course.
I don't think he looks that bad. I think he looked weirder with the long hair.
I'm joking.
Oh,
Because of the what you got.
I also take it because of everyone in the WWE, I feel I most resemble Christian, so I take that one personally.
No, you look like what's that?
Maybe I should have AJ. A blue dot on my face, like AJ.
Remember?
AJ Kirsch.
AJ Kirsch.
I meant AJ Lee.
Yeah.
I was going to say. Yeah. Well, you most resemble, I think...
Oh, let's hear this.
Taz. No, you don't.
You're
much skinnier.
All right.
You don't look like anyone in the WWE. I only think of the guy from Lids now with you in terms of someone looks like
my
you.
Doppelganger.
That your mom didn't even know the difference.
Yeah.
That's great.
We all look the same.
All right, back to Benoit Van Damme here. Van Damme just came out with a series of kicks. They go back and forth, ducking each other's moves, ending in a German by Benoit. And Ross here refers to Benoit's snap suplex as pure dynamite.
Ooh.
The title of Tom Billington's book.
Yeah.
And this was like 2 minutes in, and Benoit is already bleeding from his lip.
Yeah.
This was the match where it's like, man, did it hit me over the head like a Van Damme kick. Man, this guy just busts up everyone's mouth in his matches. Like, it's always been the joke. Like, he's always a guy that just, he'll potato people. He works very snug. But, man, it's like a constant in like every match.
Uh-huh. Be prepared. Be prepared to get that polysporin out at the end of your match.
Benoit runs into a boot, takes a split-legged moonsault, but then Benoit misses a diving headbutt. Then Van Damme misses a frog splash. Benoit gets the crossface and gets to the ropes. And we cut back to Stephanie with Bischoff, who yells, "Get him, Benoit!" And Benoit stopped, got a microphone, and said, "I got him." Benoit gets shoved off the top to the floor. He's selling the left arm, and Benoit just attacks with a hammerlock, throws Van Damme into the post. Then Benoit wraps Van Damme's own forearms around his throat, and we see Van Damme come back, misses a cartwheel, or hits a cartwheel into a moonsault. They keep going back and forth. There was a great sequence here with a Northern Lights suplex by Benoit attacking the arm, then into the crossface. And
he was like doing rolling.
Yeah.
Northern Lights suplexes.
Just like great really transitions cool. from yeah. one to the other. And he would grab the arm before it reached the rope, then into a dragon sleeper. Van Damme reverses that and gets the crossface, but kicks off the ropes. And Van Damme, one of the few matches where his hair tie came out.
Oh, wow.
Van Damme looks weird with his hair down.
It's just like long hair?
Yeah.
Like long straight hair.
Like I have this vision that hair tie is always in, that when he takes it out, his hair's just like crusted together, that it wouldn't even flow.
Yeah.
But
stay in that shape.
I wouldn't say he looked prettier with it down.
You wouldn't put him in your top 10?
No, I don't think so. No, yeah. No. He has that nose and just, he's got that weird look.
Right.
You know, the eyes. But there's a back suplex by Benoit off the top that gets countered in midair, and Van Damme lands on top and then hits a frog splash and pins Benoit. This one went 16 minutes and 23 seconds. Very, very solid match.
I thought it was solid. I had very high expectations going into this, though.
I will say this. Sorry to cut you off. I thought Benoit was fantastic here, and yep. I felt like watching this match, it's like Van Damme was along for the ride of Benoit, who was just having a great match, which was with a person who happened to be in the ring that was named Rob Van Dam.
I felt Van Dam was a little sloppy here in a lot of this stuff. I mean, as a match, it felt very similar to that Angle Ray match. You have, you know, a high flyer versus a technician. It also felt similar to that Edge and Eddie match where, you know, Benoit was working that shoulder pretty much the entire match, and then at the end you get a comeback. But unlike those matches, I found Van Dam a little bit sloppy. I found the pace a little bit slower. You know, and it also seemed like the crowd wasn't as into this as some of the other matches, perhaps because it was sort of further into the show, everybody was kind of tired, maybe just the pace was a little slower than the other matches. So the match was good, but it didn't really meet my high expectations.
Bischoff is in the back gloating to Stephanie, and Bischoff says that you can watch the Intercontinental title on Raw, and Stephanie, with her Oscar-nominated performance here, just bursts out laughing like the evil GM and just walks off.
It was the most weird, awkward, fake laugh.
Yeah. So I guess this was the tease that she had already
signed
Brock.
Yeah.
It's like, what if he had lost?
Yeah.
And wasn't this also, it's kind of, I guess, because at the time, the champion could go on both shows.
Yeah.
So I guess the viewer at home would not be thinking, you know, winner of that match. You're right, because they established that the next night that Brock was leaving for SmackDown. Yeah. And that would establish Raw's need to create a title. And that was the introduction of the world title.
Yeah.
Amazing to believe it's been 11 years where we've had those two titles.
I've had that thought that, oh, amazing, it's been 10, 11 years about, like, so many things in my life. Now that, you know, I'm about to turn 30. Like, there's so many things in my life. Oh, shit, that Radiohead album that I thought was still kind of new, it came out 10 years ago.
I think about that stuff all the time.
It's just like, I'm sure a lot of people our age can relate, you know. It's just like, it's constant. Wow, 10 years ago that happened? It just seemed like yesterday.
Like, I remember this event, like, so clearly.
Yeah.
Like, I remember watching it with my friends. I remember what I was doing. Like, it's crazy. I can remember this, and this was 11 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
Crazy. We're old. There's a video on the Un-Americans featuring, like, stock footage, like, from the 80s. Just, like, news clips of, like, American events going on. It, like, looked out, like, out of a, like, Ronald Reagan campaign video.
You just type in America into the
U.S. Copyright-free video.
Yeah. Eagles.
Yeah. This all featured Christian, Lance, and Test sharing a microphone to yell, America sucks!
That was their brilliant
in unison.
It was their brilliant catchphrase that I'm sure they spent a lot of time brainstorming.
Yeah. You know, I don't think Lance really gets the credit of being kind of the mouthpiece here for this group at the time, but that was one of the key things I think this group, they were lacking that main event star and that main event promo, but I thought Lance made up for it pretty well. Like, he was a good promo.
This is Lance's character. You know what I mean? Like, this was Lance's kind of bread and butter throughout a large part of his career. And Christian and Test, I mean, not as much for those two. But
Christian,
Lance,
I couldn't take serious. It's like, I don't buy that this guy who, like, was playing kazoos a year ago, has this absolute intolerance for American culture.
Yeah. And, you know, when they debuted, they kind of had that loose association with Chris Jericho. And I always felt like maybe Jericho purposely distanced himself from all that because, I mean, you know, these gimmicks are kind of entertaining for the short term, but they're very one-dimensional in the end. And, you know, I don't think this un-American team lasted too long after this.
No, they added Regal to the mix, and then that really just spun off into Regal and Storm basically being, you know, the UK and Canadian team.
Yeah.
But that took us to Test and The Undertaker. Lawler says he's glad Test is tall so that there is more of him to hate.
Okay.
Burn. Taker goes for the old school early, but Test tosses the referee into the ropes and thus knocking Undertaker off balance and sends him to the floor. Taker then gets thrown into the steel steps, knees first, which, man, easier ways to take those step spots than with the knees. Test is wearing him down in the ring. Crowd seemed really uninterested at this point. Taker comes back with a suplex, a DDT, gets a two count, hits the snake eyes. Then Test ducks a boot. Taker blocks the pump handle slam, and then Test blocks a choke slam. Taker ducks another boot, finally hits the choke slam, but only gets a two count, which was kind of Test's big spot, and the whole match was kicking out of this, and Jim Ross tried to play that up of the fact that not many people kick out of the choke slam. And this prompted Lance Storm and Christian to run in. Taker took both of them out, choke slammed Storm, choke slammed Christian, turned around and Test hit him with a big boot, but Taker kicked out at two for the big near fall spot. And then Test got a chair, but Taker hit him with the big boot to the chair, hit him with the tombstone, and pinned Test at 8 minutes and 19 seconds. Made sense because of where they were going with Brock's next challenger. But at the time, a lot of people thought maybe Test would get a big, big win here to kind of cement this group. But nonetheless, I think they gave Test, you know, he got the kick out of a spot, and then he had to take the tombstone.
I really don't think that even a win here would have really helped them that much.
I don't think so. And then Taker grabs a flag from the audience and just poses with it.
No doubt the least impressive of the matches on this show. I thought it was overall kind of boring, but the finish turned out pretty okay. Much help by JR's call of it. But most of the match was quite dull.
Yeah, I'd say the weakest match on the show. Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross tee up the street fight that's coming up next, as Ross says this could be the most emotional match in company history, and that Shawn Michaels last wrestled 1,609 days ago, as they go into this video of their history, and it starts off with, like, this, like, folk tune, this, like, weird music. It was like
They're friends.
It's like out of a Disney music or Disney movie or something. They showed the DX tease and the turn by Hunter, the angle that you were such a fan of.
Yep.
And then this really weird angle because they did the heel turn.
I completely forgot about this.
Yeah, the car angle where Hunter is literally cutting his explanation promo for turning heel when a PA tells him Sean's been attacked in the back. And Hunter's all concerned. Oh, no. And goes to the back. And then it was like this big whodunit. Who put Sean through this glass window? And then it's revealed by, like, super technology. They unblur the face and reveal it was Triple H who did it. I was like, all right, we had two big angles here. Really only required one.
I think it was a case. I mean,
like, it was so undramatic, I remember, at the time.
It's funny how you can kind of draw so many parallels between this comeback match of Shawn Michaels and then Bret Hart's comeback match, you know, almost a decade later.
Both involving cars.
Both involving cars. And I think in both cases, it was just, it seemed more like a case of them needing something to fill the TV time leading into this pay-per-view. And what better way to do it than a car angle?
Putting a man's face through it.
Who done it? But yeah, completely unnecessary, I thought. You know, that pedigree after that fake DX reunion, I thought was more than enough heat to kind of dwell on. But, you know, I think this car shit, it was like, the first attack was fine, but the second one just a little too over the top and kind of made the whole thing a little too cartoonish.
To me, this whole story, this was Sean's comeback match. People legit never thought that he would wrestle again. I mean, you could just – you could have done so much just in terms of, hey, email, interview, like, his wife, his doctor who says that, you listen, he should never do this again. Yeah. His back is a mess.
That was the story of this
Hunter's
match.
At the top of his game.
That was the story of this program and this match is a man who is retired and, for all we know, crippled, shouldn't even be taking a bump. Even when he took that pedigree in that fake DX reunion – I mean, I kind of cringed because I thought, oh, shit, this is Shawn Michaels, the guy who can't do anything. So even when he took that, can he even take that bump? So that was my expectation going into this match. I basically expected this to be like what ended up being Brett versus Vince at WrestleMania in that Brett was so limited in ability that he could maybe throw a few punches and then go to the finish.
Right.
I expected this from Shawn.
I did too, and that's why I was so early on, like, they teased the pedigree early, and it was like, I totally bought that this could be a five-minute match or something just to get through it. And I remember I was just completely into this entire match from start to finish because every bump Shawn took, it was like, oh, my God, his back. Yeah. Like, you just thought that this guy was glass and his back was just going to shatter.
Much of that, I think, was helped. They hid him very well, and Shawn just sold everything leading up to this match really well. Like I mentioned 2 weeks ago on a review of that Raw, even delivering the super kick right after doing the super kick, he would hold his back and
selling was so good.
He couldn't even do his own finisher. How could he go through the whole match?
Yeah, I remember I watched this with my two of my friends and my buddy Phil. I still remember it's like this whole match. He's like, oh, and he's like moving and he's grabbing his back and he's like, that's it. He was not even watching wrestling, but it was like Shawn Michaels is wrestling again. He was like, where are we watching SummerSlam?
Yeah.
Like, it was such a big deal that this guy was coming back. Like, I look back in hindsight, it's like, I wonder if, Shawn Michaels was more of a draw for this show than Lesnar and Rock for a lot of people.
Yeah, like I actually do. I do.
Like, there's those retirements where it's like, yeah, maybe he'll come back at some point. Shawn, it was just, I think most had just written him off.
And I think to everybody, this was only set to be a one-off. I mean, nobody had known what Michael's mobility was even at this time. This was probably a one and done.
And I think thus the angle at the end of this match was kind of that gave him an out to never and see, like, if he can't do another match, at least we've...
You think so?
I don't know. I really don't know. At the time,
it really seemed like, it was set up for him to get a comeback.
But it was just, well, let's go through the match because we'll explain the angle after. But Michaels comes out wearing a wife beater, jeans, and cowboy boots. I would say just a notch above his attire for this year's SummerSlam.
Which was what? Camo?
You didn't see the pre-show, did you?
I saw him in between.
It was just crazy Hunter Shawn with his, the beard. And a Brooklyn, Brooklyn Nets hat, baseball hat.
He's getting ready for a boot.
He looked fantastic on camera. So,
but he was wearing the jeans and the white beater. And then
with a biblical verse on it.
Right.
Philippians chapter 4, verse 13.
Is that the John Jones thing?
Oh, is that the tattoo? Yeah, it is
Philippians something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Is it Philippians?
We're not the place to go to for...
Well, look up this verse while you read this.
All right.
Let's find out.
Well, he was wearing that, and he was wearing his mirror-adorned leather chaps over top of this.
That's right.
It was like a mix of old and new.
God, he's the worst dresser in the history of wrestling.
No, you know what? When he was actually, in the 90s, I thought he had a great look. I thought he had some really great gear, even with the sailor's cap. I thought he looked cool. The hand wraps, I thought all that was great. But after his comeback, definitely, it was not.
You want to get deep here with this verse? I can do everything through him who gives me strength.
Cool.
God, it's a powerful tool, Way. Can get you through a four-star match.
You're going to offend a lot of people.
I just got a very interesting email here. Very interesting.
Care to read it out?
It's WrestleMania 30 related.
Oh.
Yes.
From?
That's a mystery. It's a mystery. That's more long-term booking.
Okay.
Big plans. Big plans, folks. Okay. Shawn Michaels and Triple H here. Street fight. Michaels just gets on top of him. Like, I just enjoyed this because there's nothing you hate more than a grudge match and it starts off with, some catch-as-catch-can bullshit. It's just like, these guys were ready to fight.
Sure.
And Shawn just jumped on top of him with punches. And sends Hunter to the floor, and then hits a plancha in, like, the opening minute here. And Michaels just grabs a trash lid, skins the cat, and then attacks with the trash can. If I have one pet peeve about this match, it's the fact that all of Raw was spent on the fact that both men have signed hold harmless agreements. This is unsanctioned. This match will never happen. The WWE is not responsible. And yet, Shawn Michaels, like, climbing to the top rope, and Earl Hebner's warning him.
Yeah.
It's like, why was Earl Hebner even part of this match? Like, I understand the logistics that you need that third guy in the ring to put together this match and stuff, but it just totally flew in the face of what this match was, and it drove me insane, as Earl Hebner is physically, like, intervening here in this match. It's like, fuck off. This is what these guys signed up for.
I agree. I do agree with that. I mean, you know, it seemed like they wanted to use Hebner as a device just to kind of set things up, but at the same time, they didn't figure to get, you know, they should have called it, like, what could they have called it instead of a non-sanctioned match? Weapons match with some limitations.
Yeah, it's a street fighter. Just explain. Earl Hebner is there for the finish. And that's it. He's not a part of the match.
Right.
Anyway, to me, the spot that just kicked this match really off was Michaels early on going for the sweet chin music. Hunter ducks it and just lifts him up with a backbreaker.
Yeah.
Like the safest move, but just everyone reacted to it like it was like a fucking gunshot.
And the way Sean
sells
this, it was so nice. He just sold this backbreaker like he was shot in the back, and they couldn't continue anymore. And, you know, a lot of credit to Sean, of course, but also a lot of credit to Triple H, who delivered all this offense perfectly, made it look brutal, just excellent stuff. I mean, you know, think about this. The psychology in this matchup is 4 years in the making, and that first backbreaker, I mean, might as well have been, you know, tombstone pile driver off the top rope.
To me, it's like, you know, I can appreciate all different forms of pro wrestling, but when I see stuff like this where something like a backbreaker, I'm so much more invested in this move because of a guy selling than, you know, two guys falling off a ladder to the floor.
Totally.
It's like, this was so much better. And this to me is just, this is just what I enjoy so much about pro wrestling is when something so simple can mean so much and have a crowd just so captivated. And that, then Hunter picked it up. He grabbed a chair, delivered a chair shot to the guy's back.
Yeah.
How are you not into this?
The chair shot, another backbreaker. JR as well was doing a great job of showing this.
Oh, man, this was
selling.
I'm sorry. It's like Cole and Taz doing this. It just wouldn't have done it justice, man. Like Jim Ross was just great in this match. Hunter hit a DDT onto the chair. Michael started bleeding here. Really didn't get any kind of flow going from this. It was just kind of the dried up blood. Hunter takes Michael's belt off and starts hitting him with it. Match is just all Hunter, as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the strength of this match was Sean selling that he can't handle this guy. And Hunter starts searching everywhere, finally finds his sledgehammer, and this is when Hebner tries to stop him. And Michaels fights back, but gets Irish whipped into the corner, into an abdominal stretch, which the crowd is into.
Like, normally, an abdominal stretch, I mean, just a transition
the
move.
The ultimate rest
here. Here, I mean, fuck, this was a Kimura or armbar.
Oh, this was incredible. Hunter grabs the ropes, and Hebner forcing him to let go. I'm really starting to hate Earl Hebner in this match at this point,
absolutely.
More so than when I watched this again. And Ross just tries to cover for Earl, saying that he has a heart, and he's just trying to show his emotion here. But nonetheless, gets into a shoving match with Hunter, something that you would never see Herb Dean do.
Nope.
And then he yells at Hunter, "Knock it off! I'm sick of it!" God. Michaels knocks Hunter off the top and then climbs up, but Hebner gets shoved into the ropes, and Michaels gets crotched on the top rope and then hit in the lower back with the chair as Ross just yells that Triple H hates our fans. And Hunter drops Michaels back first onto the chair in a seated, the chair is like in the seated position, gets a two count, Hunter repeatedly going for pins and getting frustrated.
He backbreakered him onto a chair.
Yeah.
That was like, I didn't watch this live initially, I only saw it in like highlight form afterwards, but like I saw all these like crazy spots put together at once, and man, like, holy shit. Like, this is insane. A guy who...
Like, a backbreaker you can work, but when you're falling onto a chair like that, I mean, you're taking impact.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
It's crazy.
To me, that was the biggest spot of this entire match, was Shawn Michaels folding a basic, chair in half with his back. It was insane.
Yeah. Insane. I am not an athlete, but if I...
Like, here's a guy who seemed to hurt himself doing his own finisher, and now he's being put through chairs.
It's insane. At this point, Michaels then blocks a Pedigree, hits him with a low blow, and then hits the Sweet Chin Music into the chair that Hunter is holding, and Hunter just with a Triple H blade job where he just pops up and he's gushing.
Yeah.
Just gushing here with blood. And Michaels with a running forearm and then a kip up that the crowd pops big for. If I'm going to nitpick, I would have taken out the kip up spot. This whole thing's based around your back, and then you're going to do a kip-up here 15 minutes into the match?
I think it was more done so that,
Oh, it gets a pop, but it was
It's like a classic Shawn Michaels thing to do, and it's just, it's just to show that, hey, I'm still good to go. I'm still okay.
They fight on the floor. Michaels takes off the shoe of Spanish announcer Hugo Savinovich and hits Hunter with it as Jerry Lawler, very proud of himself, saying, hey, a heel for a heel.
Yeah.
Michaels then pulls out a ladder, runs it into Hunter, into his head, and then into the ribs, catapults Hunter into the ladder set up against the post, gets a two count on him back into the ring, hits a superplex to Hunter, as Ross explains that Michaels tried to land on his side as he came off the top of the superplex, gets a near fall, then Hunter gets to steal steps into the ring, Michaels uses a drop toe hold, sending Hunter into the steps, then Michaels brings out a table, hits Hunter with a fire extinguisher, puts Hunter on the table, and Michaels leaps off the top, splashing Hunter through the table that is set up on the floor. That this crowd went nuts for the spot. Gave them a chance to rest here, but just a huge spot. The ladder is in the ring. Michaels then hits an elbow drop off of the ladder, calls for the Sweet Chin Music, but Hunter catches it, goes for the Pedigree, but Michaels counters it with a roll-up and gets the pin out of nowhere at 27 minutes and 21 seconds. This was just incredible storytelling.
Yeah.
And I'm always a big fan of these matches where it's such a big war, and it's just like something like a roll-up out of nowhere that's the finish and not the traditional finish. Just a great finish and tremendous match.
This crowd was so hot for that finishing sequence when Michaels, just even stood up for that Sweet Chin Music. I think this match is near perfect. It's a classic. It's one of my favorite matches of all time. Great job by Shawn. Great job by Hunter. I mean... And much of that has to do with my expectations and my, the way they shaped this match leading into it. Like, you're thinking, how is this a comeback match from retirement? How is this, like, guy who just retired for 4 years, it's like the equivalent of, Michael Jordan coming back to baseball right now, having retired however many...
Or basketball.
Or basketball.
Baseball, he didn't exactly set the highest standard.
And, winning a championship, which he actually did that
comeback, but I see what you mean. Whatever. But this was... You bring up a great point in that I remember just, A, this guy, like his back, like who knows what state it's in, but B... He was regarded as one of the best performers of the 90s.
Yeah.
And to come back, it's like, you can't just have a good match.
Yeah.
A good match, I think people would have been like, man, this guy's just such a shell of his former self. And it was like...
It's kind of what everybody kind of said about Brett, in that comeback match.
Yeah, totally. I think that's what people were fearful of. And then Shawn comes back, and it's like, man, I'll put those 8 years of his comeback up against the last 8 years before he left in 98.
This match that he had on this show was better than any of the matches on this show. He comes back from retirement and pulls off a better match than almost anybody on this roster. This retired, old, beaten down man. And, a very memorable moment in my wrestling fandom.
And you didn't watch this pay-per-view at the time.
I didn't watch it live. I watched it afterwards.
Right. So this, to me, the perfect example of why you want buffer matches. And we didn't get one here, but we did get a buffer segment.
Yeah.
Because this crowd was just, like, nuts for, like, basically 35 minutes here when you throw in the entrances. And of course, the angle afterwards, which we skipped over here, was here Sean is in his glory, cheering, posing, and Hunter attacks him from behind with two sledgehammer shots, the second one putting him down and out. And then Sean is stretchered out as Ross is just saying that Triple H is going to rot in hell for this as he leaves laughing at his accomplishments. So, and what was weird, though, was like, it was just about a month and a half after this where Sean is at the World in his wheelchair, and they ask him when he's going to be cleared to return. And he's like, well, how about now? And he pops out of his wheelchair and dances on the stage.
Yeah.
I was like, what a shitty reveal.
I agree. I thought this was handled really well, but I thought everything for the rest of the year with Sean kind of, I don't know. I didn't love it as much. Like, they kind of hot-shotted. They saw how successful this was. And they just put the title on him in that Elimination Chamber, which I really wasn't a big fan of.
Yeah, he kept it for, like, 3 weeks.
And, like, Sean, at this point, he's beyond the championship.
That's what I loved about his whole return, is that those 8 years where he came back, that one-month title reign is his only time he had the title. He never had the title, and he was one of the most over guys, if not at times the most over.
The guy who does not need it at all.
Yeah, perfect example of that. So anyway, coming off of that big match, Howard Finkel is in the ring and wants to get some things off his chest. He says this is the first pay-per-view he has called in this arena since WrestleMania 2, and says Major League Baseball may go on strike, but fans will always have the Fink. And then Trish Stratus comes out, says that she has slapped him, pushed him into mud, and Finkel refers to this arena as full of Long Island skanks. And Trish comes back saying that she's been listening to him in the back all night, and what a sexy voice he has. And Finkel here says, well, Trish, you might be onto something here. I mean, you have the puppies, and I have the wiener. And then they hug, and then Trish says she has a surprise, and turns around, and there is Lillian Garcia, who slaps him, kicks him in the balls, which causes Lillian to lose her balance and fall, much like this segment. And then Trish and Lillian cheer and celebrate to the crowd for kicking a man in his balls. And I think Taz set it up perfectly, coming back and asking Cole, what the hell was that?
Hey, their job here was to deflate the audience from the drama.
Oh, they did.
Last match.
They did.
And they achieved that. I thought Finkel was, you know, an amusing heel here.
He's just the goof at this time. So then Taz and Cole set up the main event. We go into a video package featuring Lesnar winning the King of the Ring, killing Hulk Hogan, and what was the staple of Brock Lesnar video packages at this time, shakiness.
Yes.
Just crazy shaking. They show Rock winning the title the prior month of Vengeance, the training vignettes, all summer long built up to this match with The Rock and Brock Lesnar. And that was our final match of the show. Lesnar comes out, followed by Rock, who just lays the title down at the entrance and then storms into the ring, and they start fighting. Rock takes a belly-to-belly suplex, and right away you could hear chants of Rocky sucks. Like, this New York crowd, I think they sensed that either they were tired of The Rock, they knew that this guy was the new young monster. I mean, here was Heyman, the guy who always wore the New York hat. It's just like you had all these things in motion where the crowd was just, they were behind the monster who I think they sensed was going to win this match.
That, and I think there is also already some bitterness towards The Rock for always taking off filming his movies. And, you know, at least for me, I got really sick of his comedy at this time. So he honestly, like, he was like the John Cena of that time.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, he was the top guy, but had a very split reaction to him.
And the chants begin. Heyman kicks Rock in the ribs on the floor, so Lesnar gets the advantage. More chants of Rock, he sucks. Both at one point are selling. They're on their backs, and they do a dual kip-up at the same time. Lesnar refuses to go down from clotheslines until Rock has to hit him with a third one. Crowd is booing Rock's offense. He goes for the sharpshooter, stops to knock Heyman off the apron, then gets the sharpshooter, which is booed. Heyman gets involved. Lesnar attacks as Rock goes for a rock bottom to Heyman. And then a chair is placed in the ring. where Lesnar hits Rock in the bad ribs, and this would continue to play on throughout the match. And with the bad ribs, Lesnar applies the bear hug, which was a play off the Hogan finish, where he used the bear hug, all to create this kind of, you know, that people would bite on a bear hug here in this match with Rock.
And I think a very effective move for Brock Lesnar. You know, he looks like somebody who would have a great bear hug. He's got those incredibly huge arms.
Looks like a bear.
Looks like a bear, yeah. Probably eats a lot of bears.
The Brock hug.
The Brock hug?
The brug.
Actually, it was called the Brock lock.
Well, we had the Brock lock later. That was a different move, though.
Wasn't the bear hug the Brock lock?
The Brock lock was where he had, like, the leg over top, and he'd stretch the guy on the ground.
Okay, right. But I love how Lesnar, you know, instead of just hugging a dude, like, face to face, like you see a lot of bear hugs, especially when they're just used as rest spots. It's always weird, okay? When you're watching wrestling, especially with somebody who's not familiar with wrestling, and then your bear hug comes on as a rest spot. These guys, they look like they're just like slow dancing and embracing
hug.
In the ring together.
It's called a hug.
For like 2 minutes sometimes. That always looks weird. What I loved about Brock's version, though, was he would tuck his head underneath the armpit to get more leverage and also to make it not look so...
Got to get that Gable grip down low on the spine and pull in.
And just to make it not look so, you know...
So what?
No, I was going to say...
sexual.
Yeah, or just sweet.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's what I thought of when I see this Lesnar Rock match.
Sweet. You want to make it loving.
Very sweet.
Yeah, it looks too loving.
The announcers do bring up the reaction The Rock is getting. As Lesnar is sent to the floor and Rock clears the announce table, catapults Lesnar into the steel post, and then Rock hits Paul Heyman with a rock bottom through the announce table. Big bump for Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
And hits a rock bottom to Lesnar in the ring, but Lesnar kicks out, and the crowd goes nuts here. Lesnar gets up, hits his own rock bottom that they dubbed the Brock bottom to The Rock, and this time The Rock kicks out. Rock comes back with a spine buster, goes for the people's elbow, which this crowd wanted nothing of. Fuck this move. And Lesnar pops up, cuts him off with a clothesline. Rock then blocks the F5. Lesnar blocks the Rock bottom, spins Rock around, hits him with the F5, pins Rock at 15 minutes and 49 seconds. Crowd goes nuts here for the crowning of the new guy. And they just announced that the next big thing is here, and then just abruptly go off the air.
Amen.
Like this, there's no celebration, no kind of, showcasing Rock's visual or any, it just went off the air.
I imagine they might have been running short on time.
Maybe.
In their window. But yeah, this crowd definitely wanted to see Brock Lesnar win. And a very good match, I thought, overall. Lived up to the hype. And like I said, Brock Lesnar, I thought, for somebody so new to the main roster and new to the wrestling in general, I thought he pulled this off incredibly well. Always great physical charisma, pulled off, you know, all these spots, all these, timing of the kip-ups and all that. Did a great job. And, do you think that the Rock will come back and they may do this match again this year?
I get the impression it's not going to happen at WrestleMania. I'm sure that's still their big hope, is that The Rock and Brock will be the match at WrestleMania. But I really am tentative to think that Rock, after that injury this past year, all his commitments at this point, that I just don't foresee him doing it. I think it's going to be Lesnar Undertaker the closer we get to it. But who knows? Could be totally wrong. Maybe Rock wakes up one morning and says, fuck it, I'm doing WrestleMania.
Yeah. I never realized how tall The Rock was in comparison. Because like these two stand together in the ring and they're pretty much like the same height. They actually look very... They have matching looks, you know, in that, you know, both guys are similar height, same shorts, same knee braces, everything just... And then similar, like... Tattoos, even with the bull,
and whatever that goddamn scary looking thing is on the back of Lesnar's back. And this picture, I'm going, yeah, I want that on my back.
And by this point, I imagine they'd be probably quite similar in terms of stature as well.
So there you go, SummerSlam 2002. For many people, the best SummerSlam in history. Though some people thought this year's SummerSlam is right up there with those two excellent matches. I give this show a 9 out of 10. I just thought it was a fantastic match. I'm just so hesitant to give 10 out of 10s.
I give it a 9 out of 10 as well. And maybe, you know, for me, like a 10 out of 10 would be something that I think I just...
That to me is Osaka this year from the G1. That's a 10 out of 10 show.
But something that is just like beyond perfection. I mean, I don't think this was perfect. There were three excellent matches. Actually, no, there are a lot of excellent matches, but, you know, a bunch of matches that were good, but not perfect. So, yeah, a very good show. Very, very good show.
Fantastic. So we are now going to get into your feedback over on the Law message board before we sign off here. We'll start off with Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. A look at this card, and it's dream match after dream match. Of course, the big story was Sean's return, which I think to this day is the biggest return match in wrestling history. What was supposed to be a one-shot deal turned into almost 10 years of great HBK matches that cemented Michaels as the greatest performer in the business, period. Ray was still at his peak, and that's saying something, considering his knees were already shot. Brock winning the gold was all sorts of good things, but guys, keep in mind the day after this was the debut, or re-debut, of the World Championship, which kind of had some prestige back when the brands were kept apart from each other before becoming some sort of IC title light, only one step above from being defended on the kickoff show before pay-per-views. Such a stream of great shows lately. Glad you guys ideally decided to finish the summer with the SummerSlam and not Taker versus Taker from 1994, though that would have been appreciated perhaps next year.
I believe it was actually the week after.
It was. It was September the 2nd. It was 8 days after this. Did you like that move at the time, the introduction of the world title?
No.
I hated it.
No, I never like it when a guy is just awarded a title for no reason. I think it starts off your lineage at a bad note.
I thought it hurt Brock at the time, where it's like it was almost like he ran away from Raw to go on SmackDown.
Yeah.
And you had like this heel basically saying that, oh yeah, that guy took the title and ran away. And it just kind of watered down what you had created with the Undisputed title.
Sure, but clearly there are some problems in their ability to build up these pay-per-view matches with a guy being able to travel to both shows but not his opponent. So, it lasted this long. It's made sense, and I'm sure it's done better. Like, in the end, even at this point, it still feels kind of diluted, but we all recognize the World Heavyweight Championship as the secondary title.
Absolutely.
We go to Paul from the UK, who says, what a brilliant show. Probably one of my top five WWE pay-per-views from the 21st century from top to bottom. Three excellent matches and several very good matches, two climaxing with the rise of a new star at the top in Brock. The championship switch may have felt slightly predictable, but it was by no means boring. I've watched Shawn and Trips many times over the years, and it always brings a massive smile to my face, and maybe WWE at its very best. Superb promo package, JR in top form, Trips playing the piece of shit heel to a T, and Shawn putting in the first of a whole new era of Oscar-winning-esque performances. This is why I love wrestling.
Gaurav from India, so glad that you guys chose to review this because I had so much fun watching it again. What a fantastic pay-per-view. The entire card was stacked with awesome matches, and I remember having huge expectations going into this show. The two main events delivered, in my opinion. Shawn Michaels was just phenomenal, and Triple H played the heel role so much better than the goofy-ass babyface. They told such a great story with that match. Crowd was behind HBK all along, and one fan in the second row holding a HBK Still Rules sign was a teenage Zack Ryder. He even acknowledged this on Twitter recently. Rock and Brock was a good match, and I really felt that Rock had no problem whatsoever in putting over younger talent like Lesnar before jumping ship to Hollywood. I wish JR and King had called the last match because I somehow just don't buy what Cole is trying to sell. He's improved over the years, though. An awesome pay-per-view. John teased something big for the following weeks of review away, and I hope the news is that you guys are going to review an episode of Total Divas because that shit has already become great. I give SummerSlam 2002 a full 10 out of 10, and he did post a picture there of Zack Ryder holding his sign.
Good to Mike Still, who says, this might be match per match the best card the WWE has ever produced. When the only bad worker on your show is Test, who can complain? Mysterio and Angle is one of the best openers that fired up what was a great crowd all night. While the escalating amount of weapons and high spots that ended it screamed early 2000s hardcore match, the rest of the DX Explodes match felt very 80s style, not far off from Funk versus Flair. Michael sold and sold and sold and made such desperate comebacks for near fall after near fall. This is definitely required viewing for any WWE talent looking to break into the main event.
We go on over to Lawrence. Where do I even begin? In the wake of Stone Cold walking out of the company, WWE pulled out all of the stops to make SummerSlam as strong a pay-per-view as possible. From bringing Shawn Michaels out of retirement, to getting The Rock back from Hollywood early to become champion, to feeding the world, even Hulk Hogan, to Lesnar, to make him the most intimidating challenger ever. This was very well planned, perfectly executed, and my favorite pay-per-view event in 14 years of watching wrestling. The Ray Kurt match is the best opening match to a pay-per-view I've ever seen. So fast-paced, and with two very different styles ending up complementing each other so well. Great wrestling displays from YTJ and Flair, RVD and Benoit, as well as Edge and Eddie. Bischoff fluffing his lines. The Intercontinental keeps going on here. Main event, the workout vignettes leading up to this event were fantastic, and when The Rock enters, they cut to Brock in the ring smiling. You knew it would be something special and it did not disappoint, and he gives us a 10 out of 10.
Go to Cody Tugas, who says, it's nice to go back and watch a show that is held in such high regard and to see that it still lives up to the hype. Unlike SummerSlam this year, the opener of the show could be considered one of the greatest opening matches in pay-per-view history, as well as one of the best SummerSlam matches of all time. Angle and Mysterio always had tremendous chemistry, and it was great to see both of them at the top of their game. Flair and Jericho, one of the most disappointing matches in history that thankfully has been forgotten over the years. Fortunately, the show got back on track with a great Eddie Guerrero versus Edge match, a solid tag title match, and a forgotten classic between Benoit and Van Damme.
Over to Richard from the UK. So glad to see you guys finally reviewing the shows. It sits only next to WrestleMania X7 as my favorite pay-per-view of all time. I remember absolutely loving the build week to week, from the slick Rock and Brock training montages to the female voiceover running down the card, and not forgetting Jim Johnston's fight as the theme song. I don't think WWE have equaled this effort since. The show itself absolutely delivered, with every match having an air of significance, minus Taker and Test. Angle facing off against a recently debuting Mysterio couldn't have been a hotter way to start the show. Benoit, RVD, and Jericho Flair were all you could have asked for, but in the end it was a two-match show. Triple H and Michaels is one of my favorite matches of all time. Even though I watched the show the following morning on tape, I wasn't aware of the outcomes, and as a result, it might well have been live. Just an amazing story by two men in a wrestling ring. Rock and Brock had that big fight boxing atmosphere going in, and this continued right through until the end of the night. It was by no means a classic in the ring, but was certainly solid throughout. In the end, just the buzz of the crowd and the passing of the torch was what made it a special match, capping off a fantastic show.
Rod from Ohio, the non-sanctioned match was a brawl as it should have been, but in my opinion, this match should have been last man standing. Having a referee there to count to three was not true to the story that they were telling. Triple H has some of his best matches when he's brawling, so putting him in the ring with his best friend surrounded by weapons, and you are bound to get a decent match out of him. It was great of Rock to pass the torch to Brock in their WWE title match. The two of them, being in the prime of their careers, were able to put on a great match. An okay pay-per-view worthy of a better card. 5 low blows out of 10.
Over to Alexander Rios, who says, if WrestleMania 17 is considered the peak of that specific pay-per-view's anthology, then SummerSlam of 02 is, in my opinion, at least the pinnacle of that show's history. Sure, the setup was cheap as hell, using the dome of the SmackDown set, but for once, I'm not counting aesthetics. Starting with Angle Mysterio, the match was just amazing, and I'm sure enjoyed every second of watching these two back and forth in their primes. Triple H against Michaels coming back after missing just about the bulk of the Attitude Era, wearing the lousiest street clothes you've ever seen. I'm firmly agreeing with John Pollock now and criticizing everything that man wears. And Triple H shaving off the beard and going for his evolution look. My God, that man bled in this era. You'd think he was a stuck pig or something. But yes, the famous table spot, I'm surprised that hasn't stood the test of time as other moments have. Anyway, Shawn Michaels wins, post-match with Triple H hammering Shawn in the back, showed what a despicable asshole heel he was, and great for the storyline. Brock and Rock for the title, so many Rocky sucks chants and people booing The Rock, I can't believe that this guy was getting so much Cena heat. Guess those New York fans were Brock fans, because Let's Go Lesnar chants were very audible. Counter for counter, blow for blow, this is still one of my favorite championship matches, and match for match, one of my favorite shows of all time, not to mention the swan song of the classic Attitude Era Rock we knew and loved since 98. I have to give it nothing less than a 10 out of 10.
To Wolfman Handsome, who says, the first few matches really emphasized the caliber of the roster during this period. I did the math, and 83% of this card are former or future world champions, not including Ric Flair, who is technically never a world champion in the WWE. I mean, why not?
Yeah, he won. He was a WWE champion.
Yeah. Are the Un-Americans not the most one-dimensional villains of all time? We have no real identity in that we have no pro stance. We are simply anti-your beliefs.
right-wing WWE at its best. The semi-main event featured a great, well-produced pre-match vignette, followed immediately by HBK's super gay-ass entrance complete with ramp-line confetti cannons. You said it best, John. If this guy wasn't so good, there's no way you could cheer for him. Nice chap, Sean. I couldn't stand HBK at this time. It was such a departure from the degenerate Shawn Michaels, who was one of the coolest people in the world, to this 14-year-old back in 1998. I would say I was happy when Triple H bailed him, nailed him with the sledgehammer at the end, but I was too blown away by the straight shot to the back. As far as I can recall, that was the only time the game has used the gimmick hammer.
We go to David Banks. There has been some great comeback stories in the history of sports, but at SummerSlam 2002, there was none bigger than the return of Shawn Michaels. I look at HBK as the Michael Jordan of this business. Oh, when Michael came back after a year and a half away from the NBA, everyone said that he wasn't going to be the same person he was before he left the game, and they were right. He was better. He came back and proved that he was the best ever, and you can say the same thing about Shawn Michaels in the summer of 2002. After nearly 4.5 years away from the ring, after being told that he'd never wrestle again, he proved them all wrong and showed everyone why he is the best ever. Shawn was always a great performer in the ring. He always had the talent to put on some great matches before his back issues, but now he was a little bit older, and more important, he was smarter. He could tell a story in the ring and get us caught up with the plot and had us wanting to see how it was going to end. Whether you like the man or not, you cannot take away the fact that this is a true comeback story of a man who literally came out of the darkness and into the light. Sounds like Baywatch. And proved not only to us, but to himself, that he is the best performer that has ever graced the squared circle.
Yeah.
Very poetic.
Jason in Milwaukee says, unlike this year's SummerSlam, the 2002 show had a great undercard to go with it. The only match that was crappy was Taker versus Test. Everything else was solid to good. Angle versus Mysterio was a perfect opening match. I've always felt RVD versus Benoit was an underrated match that deserved more praise. HBK looked like he hadn't missed a beat after not wrestling in 4 years, and he and Triple H more than delivered. Brock versus Rock was not technically as sound as that, but still a solid wrestling match that told a good story in the ring.
Chris from Ottawa. Hey team, welcome back, Way. Hope you found some great music at Amoeba and Rasputin Records while in the Bay Area. Did you go to any of those?
I went to Amoeba Records, yeah.
How was it?
Yeah, it was cool. Big record store.
It's funny that...
But you know, like, I mean... as
why do they call big record store Amoeba? Amoeba's tiny.
Oh, right. Maybe there are amoebas crawling inside. I don't know.
All right. Nothing to add?
No, I mean,
You teased like you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, you know, like, I mean, I don't know. Record stores, you kind of, if you've seen one, you kind of seen them all.
Oh, you know, you're not impressed by just any little...
I'm just saying, like, Toronto has some great record stores, and so, you know, I don't know. It looked just like any other Toronto record store, to be honest.
Chris continues here. I remember this pay-per-view like it was yesterday, watching it in Scramble Vision. There was only one match I cared about that night, as I'd come to realize after his retirement in 98 what a great performer Shawn Michaels was. Knowing the extent of his injuries and seeing Shawn's haphazard dive over the top rope onto Hunter on the go-home episode of Raw, I tempered my expectations going into SummerSlam. Before long, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, as the HBK Triple H match just kept going and going and building and building, and the classic Shawn Michaels finish teasing both finishers, but ultimately ending with a roll-up, blowing the roof off the building. I hoped then that Shawn could continue to wrestle, and boy did he ever. No one could have expected the second half of his career could rival the first half, let alone top it. 10 out of 10 for the memories alone.
We go to Ashley in Bristol, UK, who says, SummerSlam 2002 was one of the best SummerSlams in history, but had surprisingly little fanfare at the beginning or end of the pay-per-view. The show did, however, start with an incredibly strong match between Angle and Rey. I don't remember Kurt being bald by this point, but he was certainly over as a serious heel, in massive contrast to the goofy character from the previous summer, and the ankle lock move was super over as a finisher. Taz and Michael Cole's commentary wasn't great, with Taz's usual frustrate mispronunciation and Cole exclaiming, "Ray is a ton of dynamite." After a further two mediocre singles matches, we were treated to the mad classic that is Triple H versus HBK, which was built up strong through an excellent video package. For an unsanctioned match, there was some pretty spectacular pyro for HBK and another perplexing crowd sign that read, "Triple H, I hate bad games." This match was ultimately made by JR's fantastic commentary, putting Shawn over really strong as a babyface on the comeback trail, and Triple H as a dastardly son of a bitch, also well-used blood, and a heel-on-heel Spanish-announced shoe spot. However, the main thing that stood out to me about this match was how biased Earl Hebner was. The announcers clearly stated that the ref was there to count the fall and nothing else, yet Hebner repeatedly interfered on Sean's behalf and really took away from the unsanctioned premise.
Guy would never be licensed in Nevada.
No, he wouldn't.
These antics. And we'll finish with David Duffenberg. First off, I got to say I was annoyed when you decided to review both Raw and SmackDown before this show. But after going through both of those shows, the annoyance was gone, as it got me a bit excited to watch this show for the 800th time. This isn't just the best SummerSlam. It is one of the top five shows in WWE history to me. I personally feel that the opening match with Rain Angle is one of the best openers the company has ever had. Those two were on top of their game, and they went 100 miles per hour the whole match. HBK and Triple H was a match I was nervous for. None of the people I watched it with were sure on if he'd be able to put on a good match, let alone take the sick back bumps he took and be able to stand up again. The drama was just intense, and I thought the ending was absolutely perfect. After all the violence, HBK wins with a quick reversal and a real wrestling move. Took all of us by surprise, and I remember having to clean our table off after some drinks were spilled with that finish. Rock and Brock was exactly what I wanted to see. WWE timed the changing of the belt perfectly. Even though Brock was a monster heel, everybody wanted to see Brock as the champion. The Rock was growing way tired at the time, which was obvious by his reaction throughout the year. He could put on a solid match, though, and he gave Rock his best match of his career at that time. My only gripe was Heyman had a bit of a hand in assisting Brock to get the win, but after all was said and done, it didn't even matter. WWE had their new star established, The Rock was beat, and they had a very fresh start going forward with their new champion. Overall, I give the show 9.5 out of 10. Excellent show overall, and I can't wait for more reviews of excellent shows. Keep up the good work, guys. Well, there you go, folks. Don't get annoyed at our choices. We have a grand plan. Wait to see the bigger picture, as every person in wrestling likes to say.
Yeah.
So there you go. Thank you to everyone for your feedback. I'm always amazed at how many UK listeners we have. They just, I think they just are bred on wrestling from birth.
Yeah.
Massive fans over there in the UK. All right, well, that's going to wrap things up for this week in our edition of Review Away. We're going to get on out of here. But next week, Way, we are going to have one of our good pals returning, as we are going to be reviewing The Last of McGuinness, the documentary on Nigel McGuinness, which we had talked about reviewing way back in June, and are finally going to do it next week.
Yes, and of course joining us will be...
Oh, Damian Abraham. I thought you were going to say it.
I don't know.
I set you up, and then you set me back
up. I think I was waiting for, like, a drum roll or something.
Yeah, that
or
was...
Maybe, like, the sound of Fucked Up in the background.
I was being Scottie Pippen to your Michael Jordan. I was just passing to you, and you could hit the three.
Yeah, well...
But instead you passed it back, and yeah. Now we just
I'm more of a
turned
a
the ball over.
More of a B.J. Armstrong.
B.J. Armstrong?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I would be most, I think, like Steve Kerr.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because you're white.
The light bull. Right. Anyway, we're going to get on out of here, folks. We have clearly reached our limit. So next week, Damian Abraham is going to be here to chat The Last of McGuinness with Nigel McGuinness. That's a lot of McGuinness there in that topic.
Maybe drinking Guinness.
Maybe we should drink Guinness for The Last of McGuinness.
Sure.
And then we can see how many McGuinnesses we have to drink versus how many times we have to say McGuinness.
Maybe we'll make the Guinness Book of Records with the length of our podcast.
Oh, man. That's just it's going to cause some giddiness for those out there. That's all I got.
Oh, God.
All right. Time to end this show. We will be back next week with a brand new show. As we are, it seems like every day we do a show. I was looking at it, Wade. This is like August 28th, and I think we've done close to 28 shows this month.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
I guess not you.
You know, with all the G1 shows. But you know what? I mean, great feedback to everything. I don't think people are sick of you even yet. I don't think it's possible for people to get sick of you.
Maybe. I don't know. I never know what that breaking point is. But I'm sure I will hit... Yeah, this is show number 29 of the month on the 28th. So we are actually ahead.
So, I mean, sorry, guys.
Are we gonna hit 31 in 31 days? Because...
Whoa.
This is 28.
Yeah.
We'll do Impact.
Yeah.
Bauer and Pollock.
Yeah.
That would be 30. We're going to come up one short because September 1st is the Law Sunday.
We'll just do the Law a few days
Maybe
earlier.
I should just do an extra interview.
Yeah.
I could put that Brodus Clay interview up in audio form.
There you
and
go.
And that would be 31.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we've ever done one per day for
or
a month.
Just like...
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
John, just turn a mic on and be like, hey guys, this is
show number 31.
31 for the sake of having 31 shows in 31 days.
Is that right? I'm just making sure I'm doing all the math right. It is right. So,
I mean, I hope you guys all have big enough hard drives. That's the main thing I'm concerned about is hard drive space for all these people.
We'll stream it.
Okay, I hope you have enough bandwidth with your internet service providers.
I don't know. Do you get feedback from people on? It doesn't seem that we have any of the downloading issues we used to have with those other guys.
I haven't yet. I mean, if you still do experience, I do hear about some issues with the Android users, but I think if you use Stitcher, if you're on Android, should be fine.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
We are still posting the shows up on Podbean, but that's not going to last forever. So that's where it affects Android users, correct?
No.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Stitcher still follows our new feed.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you're on Podbean, you should really only be on Podbean if you haven't updated yet.
Right.
By now, I hope you all have.
Hopefully most have, because we're not going to be doing we've been posting them on both just to make it easy for this transition, but Podbean is not going to be... We're not putting another penny into that thing, so...
Yeah.
Buyer beware.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it works out for you guys, great. But if not...
Might lose some people. It happens. It happens. I'd rather have the dedicated few than the indifferent many.
Yeah. Let's not jinx our internet, you know...
Well, everything's perfect.
No, it's
couldn't
not.
Be better.
Things can change at any point in our... Well, anyway, stay tuned. For now, they're great. Let's just enjoy this piece.
All right. So, everyone, here's the lineup. Thursday, Friday we'll be back with Review and Impact, chatting, it's a new show this week from Cleveland. Hulk Hogan's back. We're also going to have a new Bauer and Pollock show. The MMA Report featuring special guest Anthony Pettis this week.
Wow.
Chat about his lightweight challenge of Benson Henderson. Are you excited for this fight on Saturday?
I am.
Like, I was so pumped. I've always wanted this rematch.
Yeah.
They announced it. I was super happy. I know it's shitty for TJ Grant, but I wanted to see this fight more. I've got to say that just a few days out, I feel it's just been completely buried. Like, I thought the you know, just the combination, Henderson's been on Fox, this fight, probably the most famous maneuver in MMA history with the Showtime kick. It just feels like another pay-per-view.
I totally agree. I thought when it came time for them to make this rematch that they would just milk the shit out of that video.
Like, I haven't even seen this is like the greatest commercial you can ever make to sell a fight.
Well, they did.
You have seen it.
I have seen it, but it's pretty lame.
Yeah.
Like, as far as UFC promo,
you're just pumping out so much now.
It definitely didn't look like they put the same amount of work into it. It just wasn't very creative. And, yeah, they showed the clip, but that was really it. They don't really hype the fact that this guy... I mean, the story is just so perfectly laid out for you. The guy who beat the champion is now re-challenging the champion again in his
Henderson hasn't lost since
in his hometown.
It's
so perfect, and I'm with you. I don't know if it's just the fact that maybe both Henderson or Pettis aren't really household names at the moment.
No,
but I mean, at least for me, somebody who's followed their careers for a little bit, I'm very excited for this.
Do you want to watch it on Saturday?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, where are you guys watching?
Are
you doing a post show?
No, we're not doing one on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I might do one on my own, but we're not doing one on TSN on Saturday night, so we should all watch it somewhere.
You should come to Scarborough.
Maybe I will.
Yeah.
Maybe I will. So that's coming up on Saturday.
No, anytime. Maybe I will. I've invited John many times up to Scarborough, and it's always, maybe I will, maybe I will. Never come up.
Is Gordon going to watch it?
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
Of course.
He's definitely a bigger MMA fan than wrestling. Does he ever watch wrestling?
His dad actually loves to watch wrestling.
Don't tell me that.
Yeah, his dad, Gordon's dad. Wait till you meet Gordon's dad. Wow.
Could your dad and Gordon's dad come on sometime?
No.
Together.
No, that's not possible.
That would be awesome.
Maybe we'll bring your dad on.
Maybe when I disappear in a few months.
Maybe we'll have our dads host the show.
Maybe.
Yeah, and then our dads can crank call Gordon's dad.
Like a different generation of... of us, of Pollock and Ting,
yeah,
the senior versions.
That would be a great show.
Yeah. Like, oh, what's that shit? That would be what my dad would say. They'd be outraged.
Yeah, what does your dad think of wrestling?
He thinks it's pretty stupid.
Like, does he know that his son watches this for a living?
Yeah. He knows what I do and stuff. He doesn't understand how I make a living doing all this shit. But yeah. I think once I told him, I got a job where I make money to watch this stuff and cover it. It's like, oh, okay, well, I give up then. Because he was just like, you know, when are you going to get out of this shit?
When are you going to grow up?
It's like, look at these fucking actors. You know they're actors, right?
Your dad says, like, cusses in front of you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Your dad sounds cool.
Yeah, my dad, it's not cool to swear,
it's,
is it?
Badass.
No, my mom was the complete opposite. She would never swear.
Yeah.
My dad all the time.
Look at this. What do you say? Look at these fucking actors.
Yeah, it's so just fake. I always remember the one where it was just like I'm watching a pay-per-view and it's the Blue Meanie like wearing like this fucking thong or something and he's all in blue as blue dust or something. And I was just
perfect for your dad.
Oh, he's like, what is this fucking shit? And it's just like, I have nothing to come back with. It's like, I don't know. This is they're experimenting with different stuff.
Yeah, it explains a lot how you turned out.
Dude, I don't think like, you know, kids our age right now don't appreciate how tough it is to have, like, you know, I grew up in a time where it's like, I wanted to watch wrestling. It was during the Attitude Era where they did all this weird shit. And it's like, I had to watch it in, like, my living room.
Yeah.
So it's like, my parents all, it's like, what are you watching? And it's like, I can't really necessarily explain why Jim Ross is leaned over and kissing a man's bare ass while he's wearing a cowboy hat. Like, I don't really have an explanation for this.
It makes sense. He's trying to keep his job.
It was hard. I don't think people appreciate how hard it was, like, to defend watching pro wrestling when you were like 13 to people who, especially after the popularity peak, it was like, hey, it went back to wrestling's lame again.
Yeah, you weren't there with
and
your
you
friends.
Were still watching.
You're just the weird guy in your living room.
Yeah, so there you go.
Well, look at you now, though.
Yeah, yeah. Look at me now. Yeah. Now you and I are the two people here at work who
we're
watch wrestling,
ones.
And
yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Oh, there go John Way into the
talk about that fake
talking
shit.
About fake stuff. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap things up. What's a good song way to end off SummerSlam 2002? We started off with Fight, the Jim Johnson theme.
That's right.
What was a...
Hey, you know what? I mean, I don't know if it really relates to 2002.
Who cares?
But a listener this past week goes by the name... I'm sorry. I should have been more prepared. A listener this week sent in a song that he made... And I think, John, you'll really appreciate this. This comes from our man, Farouzan, who goes by Slang as his rap name. He made a rap song based off of the fabulous Rougeau Brothers beat.
Oh, I did see it. Yeah, let's play this. I have not heard this.
So he asked if we can play it at the end of Review Away.
100%. Let's do it. All right, we're going out with that. In the meantime, go on over to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe on iTunes, follow at Way0937 on Twitter and Instagram. You never know what shots you're going to get from Way, whether it is food, an empty Young Street while it's raining. Tons of photos from
great plug.
Way's Instagram account.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, thanks.
That's all. You can give me a follow at IamJohnPollock on Twitter. No Instagram yet, but follow Way.
Gotta get on that.
I should. I really should.
People need to know what your coffees look like every day, where you go for coffee.
Yeah, some people just very upset about our non-wrestling discussion.
Fuck off.
I guess so. Yeah. I was telling Way, two of my friends now have started listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
Especially one of them who is not a wrestling fan at all. And he's like, I have no idea what you talk about, but I really enjoy your banter. And I was like, oh, cool. I don't know how you could listen to us for so long and not understand the wrestling part.
Yeah. Why don't you just give me why don't you just invite us out and we can do this live in front of you and talk?
Yeah. It's less fun that way.
Yeah.
This is way better.
It's like snooping in on somebody's conversation.
Yeah, maybe we should try and get people. People could hire us to come out and talk.
To just talk.
Okay, guys, just talk about 2003 WWE. I'm just going to order a beer and just go.
You know, just talk about what you had for lunch.
Podcasting prostitution.
We're open to it. Yeah, if you want to
hire us. We'll come talk at your bar mitzvah, your wedding.
Talk about whatever.
We're great MCs.
Yeah.
Do some wrestling chat at your funeral.
It doesn't even... Whoa, okay.
Well, lighten the mood, you know?
Yeah. He was a great man who, by the way, 2002, a great year.
Yes, it was when The Undertaker retired the dead man gimmick.
Speaking of dead man.
Yes. All right. We're going to get on out of here. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back. We'll see if we'll do 31 and 31.
Wow, 2 hours, man. We should back.
I won't lie. I've been trying to stretch this so that we hit that mark.
Yeah,
but
well, wait till next week.
Yeah, I forgot that I got to put clips in here, so we'll hit two.
Till next week, though, man. I'm looking forward to the next week.
Oh, Jesus. We'll be starting the documentary review by now.
Yeah.
So there you go. Damien Abraham next week. The last of McGinnis. So get your McGinnis ready as we go for the Guinness World Record for amount of podcasts in 1 month, which this might be it.
Yeah.
Does anyone else do one in every day for this amount
man.
Of time?
Yeah, I don't know.
Total time divided by 31 days?
We should definitely apply.
I don't think you're touching us.
Yeah, we should apply.
I think we should. Someone that works for Guinness, let us know. I think we hit it. Bye.
This rapper from Toronto, Slang Young, sent me some shit to Conan 5150 on Twitter, and I would like to say that I'm a big fan of all those battles of T-Dot. Otto's rap battle that you guys have down there, that shit is fucking dope.
All of the matches and all the battles supreme, they were the team in the zone. If you ain't come clean, they would take on other titles, tag champions, knock out the Rockers and Heart Foundation. You've never known a bunch of Frenchmen screaming hard, dropping kicks to your face, you straight bleeding blood. You got to making the money off the bonuses that Jimmy hustles to them from the Heart's ownership. They were Cooper Club, right as we all knew within. They were motherfucking patriotic Americans. Holding flags that's so tiny, ain't that so funny? French Canadians from Memphis, Tennessee.
Slang young,
American
Take a moment and listen to the knowledge I'm kicking. This ain't a gimmick, I'm spitting. This is real competition. Not even Vince could envision. That's our man on a mission. Not more, no Mabel, but at Quebec is stable. Being capable of knocking these fools out the navel. If you don't even believe it, then check out the kid. A real fight, fall jaw, jack and break up the fist. Backstage one night, yeah, that was some shit. The kid didn't even see it. A roll of quarters, knock the fuck out, dynamite. Toothless, yeah, he learned his lesson. Fucking with Canadian weapons. Lucky it wasn't a bottle to his melon. Lucky for them, the path never crossed again. Survivor Series was the last match they saw them in. SummerSlam 89, the model in his prime. Teamed up against Shawn and the Rockers by design. A battle it was, and when it was all said and done, the Canadians got the win, hands raised to the sun. Sooner than later, they parted ways. Rain him retired, but the mountain stayed. But at the end of the day, we'll never forget. One of the best tag teams to ever take steps, repping French Canadians and Canada to the T, from Montreal to Memphis all the way to the T, thumping that French noise, yeah, yeah, all American boys, boys,
slang
all
young,
American
slang
boys,
young,
boys, boys, all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, boys,
all American
boys, 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 boys,
all American
boys, boys.
Slang young,
slang young,
slang young,
slang young.
The Fabulous Rougeaus have made it official. They have moved to the United States of America. They are all American now.
Where specifically?
Memphis, Tennessee, of course. We've got all American boys now. Y'all come visit us and we'll have some grits and mint julep.
You know, that sounds great.
No, it's not great. It's fabulous.